And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It's a manic Monday. It's Monday, the 7th day of January 2013. I'm Doug Hagman. With me is my co-host, Joe Hagman. He's my son, my namesake, and Associate Director of the Northeast Intelligence Network. Folks, you're about to hear 3 hours of unbiased, uncensored, and very important news analysis, information that we need to talk about. Can we have a discussion about this? Of course we can. We broadcast live each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find us on the internet at HomelandSecurityUS.com. And we are also simulcasting with the Christians United Broadcasting Network. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you for your belief, your trust in us as we walk through this minefield, this white noise of headlines, this barrage of headlines, as we walk through this together. Folks, we're a listener-supported broadcast, and we just want to thank each and every one of you who is helping us stay on the air, whether it's through your financial support, your prayers, telling others about the program, but for your belief in us. And I just want to say thank you, and I know Joe does as well. Joe, welcome.
Yeah, glad to be here. Last show we did was Friday, and we were scheduled to do a show last night. And remember last week, I forget who was on, they said, Joe, did you ever throw a temper tantrum when you were young?
Well, I got a call yesterday about 2 o'clock from my father saying there wasn't going to be a show last night.
And that's about as pretty close to a temper tantrum as I've gotten in a while, but... I think the first time we've had to reschedule, and it wasn't just canceled, it was rescheduled. We were doing the show Friday, and we have some other excellent guests this week too. We're going to have Nathan Leal on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, and Tom Horn on a special Sunday night next week, and also possibly Pastor Paul Begley will be joining us this week or next week. We still haven't set a date, but we are... ready to go with that. So,
I'll tell you, it's going to be a tremendous week. I'm looking forward to. I had a conversation with Nathan Leal, an off-air conversation, and what a tremendous guy! What a tremendous amount of information. And I want to thank Karen, who's listening right now live from Rome, Italy, where it's just after 2 in the morning. What are you doing up, Karen? What are you doing up? Waiting for our show to start. I just want to say hello, Karen. Thank you so much for listening. And it's accordingly, according to the email I have, it's beautiful there in Rome, Italy, right now, where, like I said, it's just after 2 a.m. Karen, thanks for your email.
Yeah, we got a lot of information to get into tonight. As we have changes inside of our government, with position people being moved around to different positions.
Oh, and we got
the history of these people who are being moved around. They are not being appointed to these positions because they're good at what they do. They're being appointed because they have the dirt that can be held over them and they can be controlled. And they're not good people. And we're going to prove that to you tonight.
Well,
in one instance. And
we're going to make a case. How's that? We're going to make the case. Yeah, I got to tell you, if you have skeletons rattling around in the closet, you know skeletons don't like closets. Just remember that. Guys thinking, you guys out there thinking that, you know. By the way, and I heard this, private detectives are often associated with following spouses, cheating spouses. We don't do that as private investigators. Well, we investigators in the private sector, you know, we took the fraud cases for corporations. So we never had that We never did that. Well, I shouldn't say never. We did that occasionally in special circumstances, but it just was never a good idea. But I got to tell you, January 7th is the day, according to news reports, when people decide, when more people decide to have an extramarital affair than any other day.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why that is. But they make a conscious decision, according to some survey here, poll, where today is the day for married people to decide to have an extramarital affair. And I don't know, what do you wake up one morning and say, well, you know what?
I don't see that happening.
I think I'm going to have an extramarital affair. It's January 7th, and, you know, it's sunny and it's cold, but that's okay.
That's probably one of the weirdest facts I've heard.
I heard that, and I thought, wow. I mean, you know, 30 years, although we, you know, Joe and I never, although that was not our specialty, or we never really did that kind of work. I just thought that was a really odd statistic. But it also speaks to the morality of our society. Yeah, man.
I want to start off the show tonight by asking you a question. I know we didn't get a lot. I mentioned it to you Saturday. We didn't even really talk about it. This is one of the bigger issues people have been asking about. HJ Resolution 15 abolishes term limits. What do you see happening with this? And I'll tell you my theory.
You know what?
They're going to do this.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it at the beginning of the second term.
No,
in my opinion. This might be a little message that I might do it at the end of my term.
Well, I was talking to Keith Hansen, by the way. Keith, we talked over the weekend, and he's got his finger on the pulse of different things, and he mentioned that, and he said, you know, that pops up like every year about this time, or that always pops up in some form of a resolution, or but it never goes anywhere.
Okay.
So, and I didn't know that.
It just surprised me to see it pop up like that.
Yeah.
And I know if he's going to do something like that, they're not going to make a resolution and
talk
about it.
You're right. And I got to tell people, Joe came to the studio early today, and we planned on working together, working very hard. And what happened was we ended up going in different directions. So if you can imagine an office setting, a studio setting, where two people sitting in the same room saying about five words to each other for, like, you know, in a six-hour time period.
Yeah.
And that's how it was. We were just engrossed in what we were doing. So
I got to tell you, I'm in a weird mood today. I'm reading all this information, and it's like not overwhelming, but where does it end?
Well, okay.
Where does
it begin and where does it end?
The title of the show, Striving for Destruction. Our government, the people who are allegedly in charge of keeping things together,
right,
are working as hard as they can to destroy America as it is already gone.
And that's
freedoms
that's
that are
the
left.
Title you picked. Striving for, that's a good title because that shows an active, not a passive, but an active.
Right.
Yes,
and
an agenda.
We can give hundreds of examples from, you know, the last 10 administrations, I'm sure. The last two administrations being, you know, the most flagrant, I would say, with the beginning of the tortures and the drone wars and what we see Obama doing with the economy and what Bush did with the economy. It's getting worse. And now we see a renowned French economist to join Obama's team. Once named Time Magazine's top 100 most influential people in the world, has been named by Barack Obama to help shape U.S. global development policy.
Okay,
Francis
keywords in
Esther
there.
Esther DeFullo, a world-renowned economist.
Yeah.
And she's going to be advising the Obama administration on global development policy.
Global.
Called the Global Development Council. The group was founded by Obama in 2010 to help shape the U.S. development efforts
abroad. See, and that's the problem too, because it's a European mindset. And the European mindset, folks, is those people who don't believe in the Illuminati, I don't know what to tell you. After
you call what you want, the New World Order,
right?
The Satanists, the Illuminati, it's all
shadow government,
it's, yeah,
whatever.
It's but, behind the scenes.
But the Rothschild family is really exerting the influence right now, and that's a European influence, and we're seeing it by such appointments as this.
Yeah, and it goes on. This article goes on to say she was raised in a left-leaning Protestant family, where she became very aware of the economic divides and social injustice at a very early age.
Okay, anytime you hear that, social justice
no,
social or
social injustice.
Yeah, I know, but
so
social
injustice. There was the class warfare.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's the how they naturally divide people. One of the easiest ways to divide people is to tell the people who don't have much that the people who do have a lot don't deserve it. They do. I mean, we've been seeing this, and all this as the middle class is evaporating at rapid pace. I don't have the article, but I saw it. You know, the middle class will be gone, like, in less than a year, I think. They're proposing new. They want new $1 trillion in new taxes, they said today. I mean, they're getting so crazy. It's so in your face that any more reading the news, I just want to shut down the computer or get away from it, you know?
Oh, but it's easy to do. That's why you have us to help you walk through it, folks. I mean, because, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it's going through these headlines tonight, and Planned Parenthood reports record year for abortion, thanks to who? The tax dollars.
Yeah.
How sick is that? I mean, I don't want to pay a tax ever again in my life after reading that article.
And I was talking with an individual, we've been talking for a long time, who said, well, there is a way, obviously people stop paying taxes out of the tax, you know, they take a stand and there's a tax protest. And this gentleman really knows his stuff when it comes to the enforcement part of the IRS and how to not pay taxes. It's not, I know people will scoff and say, come on, you know, it's the minute you do that, you'll be made an example of. But really, Joe, I got to tell you, really, the only solution in terms of civil disobedience to fight this machine, this evil machine that we've got, is to stop feeding, stop paying, stop feeding the beast, stop paying the tax dollars.
Yeah, I mean,
and now I'm not allowed.
No, people make.
We're not allowed to advocate
their own decisions. Everybody should make their own decisions,
yeah,
according to, you know.
Well, yeah, you can actually go to jail for suggesting not paying taxes and advocating.
Well, can you go to jail for me saying I won't pay taxes?
No,
okay.
No, you.
Well,
just
I won't pay taxes anymore. How's that?
Well, then,
I mean, really, what's the point? We see that, I mean, it is getting so in your face that it's no longer, the people who have been denying that this stuff is happening, that America is losing their freedoms, and you did a great write-up on what some terrorism, anti-terrorism training law enforcement documents had inside them.
Well, you found the documents. And,
yeah. Things like
yeah,
know your rights. The bumper stickers that say "Know Your Rights,"
yeah,
that's an indicator
of a domestic terrorist.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. We see Bank of America is freezing gun manufacturers' accounts. Obama set with the backing of Pelosi and Reid to raise the debt ceiling via executive order. We have just things running rampant with the what's going on in the Middle East with the wars in Syria. We had Assad speak this weekend. And what he said was interesting, and we're going to get into that.
A lot of things, yeah. Well, before I forget, let me just say this is kind of off-topic news. I don't know how many folks, I don't know how many of you in the United States are looking for ammunition to buy. Let's just say you've got you've got one of those evil black rifles. We'll just say it's an AK-47. So you'd be looking for 7.62 by 39 ammo for sale. Well, I just for the heck of it, I called a gun shop in our area and asked them if they had any. And the guy laughed. He said, "No, and we're certainly not going. I'm not going to buy any. We don't expect any in. I'm not going to buy any because it's $1,800 a case now." And you're looking at $3 a bullet.
That's insane.
Okay.
That is insane. That kind of pricing for ammunition.
Yes, and also one thing, the run on the ammunition also is extending to 22 long rifles, where now 22s, and I'm not sure if Keith Hansen talked about this or not, but. I think we had a discussion about this, but 22s are actually becoming a weapon of choice, a long rifle sniper-type weapon of choice. But now, 22 long rifle, for example, 50-count hollow point, $3.85 each. It's incredible. The prices are incredible. So, I don't know if it... I don't know what to chalk this up to.
I know. I do. What was told to us many times by many different economists and people who understand what's going on, that as the dollar continues to lose its value to inflation because of the printing of the money, the assets will obviously go up and the currency will become things like bullets or whatever the need is that people have. Barter and trade system.
I suppose I should have clarified that. I don't know what to chalk up the long rifle, 22 long rifle ammunition prices to, but that's what I meant. But no, you're right though. On in the scheme of things about how these are, the valuation of the dollar, how it's affecting everything. And by the way, folks, if you got paid last Friday, did you know that? Yeah. What's that? Did you happen to, if you get a regular paycheck, like every other week or every week, did you happen to notice if you're in the normal, what I call normal people range, that means anywhere from minimum wage to...
Yeah, I don't think there's anything normal anymore in this country. We're still fortunate that there's still an illusion of freedom. We still are relatively free. The dollar still does buy things. But
yes,
it's headed, on a 100-mile-an-hour train down a cliff that is about to cut off. And when that happens, they'll be there with the solution. As we said before, it's the, Hegelian dialect?
Dialectic, Hegelian dialectic. I always have trouble saying that. Dialectic. Yeah.
But listen to this. Now, we just had this fiscal cliff thing pushed back where they passed a bill cutting $1 in spending for every $41.
And if I can say that, according to my DHS insider who commented on that, he said they would reach no meaningful deal, and they didn't.
Yeah. And now the Democrats are looking for up to $1 trillion in new tax revenues. Now, before I go to that article, I'm going to go to this one from the Washington Times. I found this a little bit amusing. Obama supporters shocked, angry at new tax increases. Sometimes watching a Democrat learn something is wonderful, like seeing the family dog finally sit and stay at your command. With President Barack Obama back in office and his life-saving fiscal cliff bill jammed through Congress this new year, it has brought a surprising turn of events for his supporters. What happened? That my Social Security withholdings and my paycheck just went up, a poster wrote on the liberal site Democratic Underground. My paycheck just went down by an amount that I don't feel comfortable with. I guarantee this decrease is going to hurt me more than the increase in income tax will hurt those making over $400,000.
Just because, we're getting hurt. I mean,
these people don't get it.
No, they don't.
And until it happened to them, until they're the ones being affected by it, the normalcy bias we've always talked about,
mm-hmm.
they don't care. But this, I don't think it'll change anything. People will take it. like they always do, and just go with the flow. Maybe they'll expand the welfare program more.
Folks, do you feel that there's a mass consciousness that is arising? There seems to be like a number of different things taking place all at once. Where you reflect the words of different posters on the forum. If you go to coffee shops, you go to diners, you go to even standing in line at the post office or the pharmacy today, listening to some people talk, there is this level of anger like I've never seen in my life.
Well, see, you must be living in a different city than I am, because that's why I don't go out. I can't find anybody who has anything bad to say. And if you dare even start talking about...
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I don't go many places except in shopping here and there, but I don't hear people complaining. I hear them talking about football and how they're, you know, what they're going to do for the next week, and just the things that have no value of any kind.
Well, maybe it's because sometimes, like, I'll stand and I'll just do weird things like stand or sit. And stand and listen. And I might stay there for 10, 15, 20 minutes and just listen to what people are saying. But I don't know. I just see this mass consciousness array. And, folks, I mean, we'd be happy to hear if you think if there is this awakening going on or something changing.
And there is something changing, though, because, I mean, people feel it. I feel it. It's getting dark. One example, look at Drudge. Obama nominates mastermind of drone strike program as next CIA director.
Yeah, as we talked, Joe.
That's not even the worst part.
That's not even the worst part, indeed.
And we're going to go back to one of your articles and where you lay it all out. And how he got in his position is not because he was dropping drones on innocent women and children in other countries. Yeah, it's what he did for his master, Barack Obama, back in 2008.
Yes, that's very true. And we're talking about the one and only, the person that's being nominated for the CIA position, Mr. Brennan.
Yeah, and think about this. Remember Obama, how he talked about Bush's tactics of treating people suspected of terrorism, the torture, was one of the torture techniques expert under the Bush administration.
Well, an equal opportunity.
I mean, it's just the...
Yeah.
If people don't see what's happening now, they're never going to. And I don't think they will.
Well, And see, though, Joe, don't you think, though, that the... Isn't this, because I go back to what you named the program, I think the intent, and folks, interested to hear what you have to feel, but I think the intent is to divide and conquer. The intent here is to divide the United States along racial lines, along social lines, along whatever lines, and then
break it down to build it back up with the international order.
Right. And Obama's not interested, or his handlers are not interested in the transformation of America. It's the destruction of America and then the building it up from the cinders.
Yeah. And with this John Brennan, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on him, and then I'm going to let my dad take it to where it's important. His experience here, he's an assistant to the President for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism from 2009 until now, president and CEO of the Analysis Corporation from 2005 to 2008, then the interim director of the National Counterterrorism Center, and he was also the Terrorist Threat Interrogation Center. He's one of the directors there, and the CIA Deputy Executive Director. And this is one of his more famous quotes. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to take a life to save a life. That's what we've been able to do to prevent these individual terrorists from carrying out their murderous attacks. But then we're going to play an audio for you after we explain the background of the Analysis Corporation connection. because this is what is gotten him or will get him the head of the CIA, to the head of the CIA.
Right. Of course, look, Brennan was, he's got a bachelor's degree in political science from Fordham University. You can read about this. A master's degree in government, University of Texas at Austin. He got that back in 1980. He held numerous positions throughout the government. He's got a wife and three kids. And as you point out, that famous quote, that was interesting. That was from last year, on ABC's This Week.
Yeah.
But what do we know about John Brennan in, let's say, outside of his government work? Well, remember back in 2008, folks, the break-in at the passport office, the computer break-in at the passport office. Remember that?
Yeah, and you, in your article, The Body of Lies, From Benghazi to Barack.
Right.
You guys can find that and search it at HomelandSecurityUS.com, and I'll post a link in the chat room in a few minutes. This is what you wrote. You wrote this. According to published reports, Stanley Incorporated was awarded the $164 million contract to print new U.S. passports in 2006. Two employees of Stanley Incorporated, along with a third individual employed by another defense contractor identified as the Analysis Corporation, were identified as the perpetrators who breached the records of the U.S. Passport Office on three occasions in 2008 and improperly accessed the passport records of Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain. The breaches occurred on January 9th, February 21st, and March 14th of 2008.
Okay. And who was the CEO of the Analysis Corporation at the time of the passport office break-in? It was none other than John Brennan.
Yeah, and this did not come without life loss.
That's right. Now, Brennan at the time, or Brennan previously served as a close advisor to Obama in 2008. Well, at the time, I suppose, it ran concurrent with his Analysis Corporation stint there. Obviously, on matters of intelligence and foreign policy, he contributed to Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, that in addition to his 25 years in the CIA. Brennan was chief counterterrorism advisor to Obama under the official title of Deputy National Security Advisor for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism and Assistant to the President. Now, folks, I'm going to take you to a place here that not too many people, I don't think, will take you to. Brennan and Benghazi, is there a link? Well, okay. Let's go back to 2008 very quickly here. Recall that at the time of the passport office break-in, Obama was on the campaign trail, and he was already picked. He was going to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to remember, and you have to go back, and you have to really look at the headlines and the various things that were taking place back there.
And also remember his detainment in Russia over the passport.
Right.
While he was a senator.
Right. That was when he was actually a junior senator.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. And that had something to do with his passport. But here's the deal. There were three employees related to the Stanley Corporation and the Analysis Corporation and Brennan. Brennan was the front man for these subcontractors. The three people, Obama, Clinton, and McCain's passports were allegedly accessed via computer. Now, here's the issue. What did they do with this information? What did they do? Were they really after McCain's, or did it just, you know, it just show? A lot of times, if your intent is to, we'll say, you know, go after person A, you go after person A, B, C, and D, and then it's all muddled and no one really can tell. So, you know, who was really the target of that? And I would contend, it's my belief, based on research, that Obama was the target, but not to secure any information, but to change the information in the passport office files. See,
to copy, alter, or remove it. Right.
Exactly.
Because of one thing I see, a trip to Pakistan.
Right, among other things. Plus, there are a number of issues. But that always bothered me, that passport break-in, because it was like, wow, there's just too many unanswered questions. And then it just kind of went away really quick.
Well, what happened was when Obama was on the campaign trail, Jake Tapper asked him about what he thought about the break-in at the passport office. And that went, like you said, nowhere.
But it stopped him. And folks, if you recall back at that time when he was on the campaign trail, there was a period of time during the notification. If you look at the dates, and again, it's at HomelandSecurityUS.com. Just look up the article "Body of Lies from Benghazi to Barack." But if you look at the dates and you look at the campaign trail and you look at what was going on back then in 2008, it stopped Obama in his tracks. Obama had to do some things, it seemed like. He had to kind of make sure that things were okay. And he was working with Brennan, it appeared. Brennan, although Brennan was the guy whose people had accessed the information, it was made to seem like a break-in. But in my view, based on my research, it wasn't a break-in. It was presented as a break-in, but done so the information on Obama's passport could be changed. Now, however, there was information that was removed during that breach. Once again, if you're going to make it look like a burglary in a house, you're going to take something, generally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now this is where a young black man comes into the picture. Remember Lieutenant Quarles Harris Jr.? Lieutenant, by the way, is not a military designation, just a weird first name. Well, leaks that came out, including those in the Washington Times, reported that they didn't know whether any information was taken. But
what they said in the Washington Times is that the State Department investigation of improper computer access to passport records of three presidential candidates is focusing on one remaining employee, a contractor working with a company headed by an advisor to the presidential campaign of Barack Obama.
Right.
A probe by the State Inspector General will include polygraph tests for the supervisors in the passport section to find out whether the three contacted employees who were accused of tampering with the records did so for a political motive or part of an operation to obtain personal data on Mr. Obama, Senator McCain, or Hillary Clinton, not mentioning the tampering of
right.
But it also goes on to say, the third employee who has not been fired worked for the Analysis Corporation, which is headed by John Brennan.
And therein lies the key and the link to Brennan, Obama, and Quarles Harris, because from that intrusion, information was provided to credit card information. And you have to understand, too, how the cyber intrusions work, where you can access a whole bunch of information. It's not a stretch. Quarles Harris had in his possession stolen credit card information from the State Department that he got from a State Department employee working in the same division, branch, or area as the passport office break-in. So right away, the D.C. police detectives grabbed Harris and said, okay, you know what, there's something more to this. Well, indeed there was, because, and they said, you're going to cooperate with us for a lighter sentence, otherwise you're going to go away for a long time. Well, Quarles Harris said, okay, not a problem, and made an appointment to talk with the detectives. Made a series of appointments to talk with the detectives. Well, before he could really do any talking, he was found shot to death in his car on April 17th, 2008, just over a month after the last passport office breach. And you know what? He was found shot in front of the Judah House Praise Baptist Church in the northeast section of Washington. He was shot
in his head.
Yeah. And, you know, to this day, that murder remains unsolved, and the official story is that Harris was either a victim of random violence or it was a street deal gone bad. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible. Is it likely? Do you really believe in coincidences like that?
No, that's way too much, connections for me. And obviously nothing came of the investigation.
Of course not.
We don't see anything happening.
Dead men tell no tales, by the way.
No, not at all. And also, another note on John Brennan. I don't know if it's he has a multi-personality disorder. I'm going to play an audio for you.
Yeah, folks, because of this.
Okay.
This is good.
He is... We have a headline, Obama nominates pro-jihadist John Brennan to the head of the CIA. At the same time, this pro-jihadist is killing thousands of people by ordering drone strikes. Okay?
And thousands is an accurate collective number.
Yes. Okay? Now, I'm going to play this clip for you. And when I played it on the computer before I downloaded it, it had a little... glitch to it. It's not that bad, but let's see how it plays. This is John Brennan talking about the war on terrorism is over, jihadists and global war are unacceptable.
And this is going to be, unless we have something to say about it, your new CIA director.
Indeed, it was telling that the president was actually criticized in certain quarters in this country for not using words like terror, terrorist, and terrorism in that speech. This goes to the heart of this new approach. Why should a great and powerful nation like the United States allow its relationship with more than a billion Muslims around the world be defined by the narrow hatred and nihilistic actions of an exceptionally small minority of Muslims? After all, this is precisely what Osama bin Laden intended with his September 11th attacks, to use al-Qaeda to foment a clash of civilizations in which the United States and Islam are seen as distinct enemies that are in conflict. In his approach to the world and his approach to safeguarding the American people, President Obama is determined not to validate al-Qaeda's twisted worldview. This leads directly to the second element of the president's approach, a clear, more precise definition of the challenge. This is critically important. How you define a problem shapes how you address it. As many have noted, the president does not describe this as a war on terrorism. That is because terrorism is but a tactic, a means to an end, which in al-Qaeda's case is global domination by an Islamic caliphate. Confusing ends and means is dangerous because by focusing on the tactic, we risk floundering among the terrorist trees while missing the growth of the extremist forest. And ultimately, confusing ends and means is self-defeating, because you can never fully defeat a tactic like terrorism any more than you can defeat a tactic of war itself. Likewise, the president does not describe this as a global war. Yes, al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups operate in many corners of the world and continue to launch attacks in different nations, as we saw most recently in Jakarta. And yes, the United States will confront al-Qaeda aggressively wherever it exists so that it enjoys no safe haven. But describing our efforts as a global war only plays into the warped narrative that al-Qaeda propagates. It plays into the misleading and dangerous notion that the U.S. is somehow in conflict with the rest of the world. It risks setting our nation apart from the world rather than emphasizing the interests we share. And perhaps most dangerously, portraying this as a global war reinforces the very image that al-Qaeda seeks to project of itself, that it is a highly organized global entity capable of replacing sovereign nations with a global caliphate. And nothing could be further from the truth. Nor does President Obama see this challenge as a fight against jihadists. Describing terrorists in this way, using a legitimate term jihad, which means to purify oneself or to wage a holy struggle for a moral goal, risk giving these murderers the religious legitimacy they desperately seek but in no way deserve. Worse, it risks reinforcing the idea that the United States is somehow at war with Islam itself. And this is why President Obama has confronted this perception directly and forcefully in his speeches to Muslim audiences, declaring that America is not and never will be at war with Islam. Instead, as the President has made clear, we are at war with al-Qaeda, which attacked us on 9/11 and killed 3,000 people. We are at war with its violent extremist allies who seek to carry on al-Qaeda's murderous agenda. These are the terrorists we will destroy. These are the extremists we will defeat.
And there you have it. That was what he said just a few months ago in April 2012, at the same time calling it wise to drop drone bombs with from Reaper drones on innocent victims across many countries. And if you heard him say that the caliphate that they're trying to create is the furthest thing from the truth, well, look what has happened. Look at the regime changes from secular to complete radicalization. It is just startling to see, and that's why we opened with this John Brennan thing. I know it's tedious and really he's just another worm in a, you know, with the rest of them, but it's just that pattern. These evil people, the eviler they are, the more likely they are to get a head of the CIA. I mean, look, George Bush Senior.
Well, one thing about John Brennan, too, that you have to, that people have to understand is in the terrorism training, anti-terrorism training or counter-terrorism training as well that he has his hand in, Islam.
Counter-terrorism training or training of the terrorists? He's bombing them with one hand while giving them money and guns with the other.
Yeah, if you listen to what he said in that clip, you would, there was so much wrong with what he said only because of what his actions don't match. Well, first of all, what he said is actually incorrect. He's painting Islam in a different light than what it should be painted. What he's teaching and what he's requiring of, or what he has required of his people during his tenure at the CIA, previous tenure, that Islam is not a violent religion, and it's actually a cousin to Christianity and the Jewish religion. And it's monotheistic, and of course, it equalizes classes through classes of people now, through the love of God. And jihad is actually, or Islam is actually, by definition, submission to the will of God, and the Muslim is one who submits. So it's totally peaceful, and Muhammad is on par with Jesus. Now, this is the John Brennan Islam 101. In the same John Brennan, in the same, I should say, the same teaching, holds that Jewish extremism is a problem, where terrorists, Jewish terrorists, exist in the form of groups that feel they have a right to reestablish the biblical kingdom of David. And that's taught through the federal government, the CIA operations and training, as well as exported to local and state and other federal law enforcement agencies through what is called the SLAT program. The SLAT program, S-L-A-T-T. That's been around since 95 or 96, I believe it is. And it's funded by the Department of Justice. or it's actually operated by the Department of Justice and funded by the DOJ Bureau of Justice Assistance. But if you look closely at that program, they redefine terrorism well beyond anything we've ever seen. And in fact, you recall the MIAC report? Well, the federal part of this defines anyone that's dedicated to a cause or is committed, disciplined, team-oriented, trained. It sounds like you know, a good candidate for a Fortune 500 company leadership job or management position, but they are, people like that are the terrorists now. So they're right-wing terrorism, and that's where the focus is, even though the CIA is not to be operating on American soil. Well,
yeah.
So much for that, right?
Oh, yeah, and I have a lot on that I can't even get into because there's so much I have to go through with these PDFs I've come across. But moving on to Syria, Assad gave a speech on Sunday after 2 years of civil war and about 60,000 dead. And he said he demanded that regional and Western countries stop funding and arming the al-Qaeda rebels that are trying to overthrow him. He says, "We never rejected a political solution, but with whom should we talk? With those who have an extreme ideology, who only understand the language of terrorism, or should we negotiate puppets whom the West brought? See, we negotiate with the master, not the slave," he answered.
That's true.
And he went on to say, "This is a revolution, and are these revolutionaries? By God, I say they are a bunch of criminals."
You know, it's odd to say that you agree with Assad, a dictator.
I mean, there's
it's uncomfortable.
Gaddafi did that I agreed with. He did a lot for the people of his nation, giving them, nationalizing the oil, and he had all these, well, he'd give married couples houses, and
well,
he was not a good person all the time, and I don't know the whole history of Assad or Gaddafi.
Gaddafi, I wouldn't put in that.
From what we saw, did they do anything? Have we ever seen any proof that they ever did anything to start any of this?
No.
Okay.
No, and it's the push of the Muslim Brotherhood. And see, Brennan, as well as Grover Norquist and others, Republicans and Democrats, progressives, and even some conservatives with a small c, are bringing this Muslim Brotherhood mindset into the State Department, into the West Wing as well, and they're exporting it through operations like Benghazi. Benghazi was the biggest running operation in the history of the world, basically, weapons running operation. And it was inspired by the Muslim Brotherhood. And, of course, it's the handlers are, I mean, we're doing the bidding for Saudi Arabia. And people have to understand that.
Yeah, the humanitarian bombs.
Yeah. So, and now, folks who have been listening to us for a long time, we have said that the Muslim Brotherhood operatives have strong influence over U.S. policy. We have long said that. We've long said that they've infiltrated the White House. Now, the Egyptian magazine is claiming, in fact, it was a December 22nd story published in, I cannot pronounce the name of this, so I'm not even going to try. I think it's Rose El Yousef magazine out of Egypt, December 22nd edition. Said that, there are at least six individuals working inside the White House who changed the White House from a position hostile to Islam or various Islamic groups, including the Muslim Brotherhood, to the largest and most important supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's an amazing. Did they name the six people? Yes, they did. Arif Ali Khan, Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Policy Development. Did you hear that? Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Policy Development. This is a guy who sets the policy for Homeland Security. Mohammed Elbieri, a member of Homeland Security Advisory Council. You wonder why at airports? You wonder why Advisory Council. Rashid Hussein, U.S. Special Envoy to the OIC, and others. Okay. The President of the Islamic Society of North America is in there as well. And Abu Patel, a member of President Obama's Advisory Council on Faith-Based Neighborhood Partnerships. See, infiltration into the White House.
I'm going to skip on to another story because I know something's coming up here shortly. There was a incident today where apparently Alex Jones was detained by the TSA in Austin on his way to a flight for an interview with Pierce Morgan that's going to be airing in a few minutes.
I can't wait till I talk to him next time. I really want to talk to him.
And in the article that was on Drudge, you broke a story about the people who were critical of the TSA were put on list. Well, Congressman Bob Barr got a FOIA request and proved that it was right.
Wait a second. Yeah, I got to tell you this, Joe. No. I was excoriated by soup. I was called in
in
the book, man.
I remember.
No, it's not true. I'm a kook. I'm a nut. But the records are there, so you can read them. All the people who think that.
I mean, the freedom of information.
You mean I was right?
Really, yeah.
You mean
right.
I wasn't making that up?
Yeah.
Oh.
They were forced to admit after the National Opt-Out Day in 2010, the TSA, that it had kept records on people like Alex Jones and Matt Drudge and other prominent critics of the TSA. But it goes on. Anyway, he wouldn't take off his shoes, whatever, and the police told him to take his shoes off or he was going to arrest them. He didn't have a choice to even leave the airport and skip the flight and stay home. And it was just a big hoorah-rah. But I think the real show is about to begin when he goes on to Pierce Morgan. It's going to be like, I don't know. It's going to be funny. I'm allowed to watch it later.
Yeah,
that'll be a circus. And the only reason, I couldn't think why Pierce Morgan would have him on. Because I remember seeing him on The View, and you know, when he gets going, he's just like he goes.
You know what I think is?
It's Pierce Morgan's ego, I think.
But here's,
and he's making a mistake.
I think Pierce Morgan is walking right into this. I really believe that Alex Jones is not going to be the Alex Jones of Genesis Radio when he walks into that studio. He's going to be composed.
I hope so.
I do, too.
Because it can't come off looking all crazy. But at the same time, there needs to be that level of anger. And, he needs to go at this hard. But either way, it'll be a nice little fun time to watch that and get your mind off all this horrible things going on.
It could be comedy.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to say this. On November 23rd, 2010, that was 2 years and how many months ago, I wrote the following article, and this is at HomelandSecurityUS.com and CanadaFreePress.com. DHS and TSA, making a list, checking it twice. And see, it says, following the publication of my article, Gate Rape of America, I was contacted by a source within DHS who was troubled by the terminology and content of an internal memo that was issued yesterday. That would have been on the 22nd of November 2010. The bottom line is this. My contention was, based on my source, he said, look, you complain about the TSA, that they are taking a list, they're taking your names, and they're creating a database of any person, group, or domestic alternative media source that actively objects to, causes others to object to, supports and or elicits support for anyone who engages in such travel disruptions at U.S. airports. People at the airport, the TSA agents and DHS administrative branch people, they're instructed to identify and collect information about the persons or entities and submit information in the manner outlined within the directive. So that's what I wrote on November 23rd, 2010. I had received many in fact, if I could name them, I would, but I can't because I don't remember. But the people who people said, you know what, you're a liar. You don't. No one contacted you. I mean, I was calling.
CNN reporter Drew Griffin, as it says in this article, was put on the TSA watch list immediately after he filed a report being critical of the organization.
So, but yeah,
and well, he's just one of many. We could spend a whole show going through.
So yeah, I mean, and I'm not interested in trying to. I mean, I have no interest in trying to redeem myself. But the fact of the matter is, folks, believe me, if you've been openly critical of the TSA, you're on a list, a specific list, and that's the story. And how do you get off that list? Well, you know what? We all have to stick together. There's no getting off the list unless we disband the TSA or cause the TSA to be disbanded. That's again. I contend that the TSA is the most visible and vulnerable government agency out there, that if we stand together, if we lock arms and we say, you know what, you're not touching me, you're not touching a member of my family, that's it, period. You know, we'll go through the safety checks, the reasonable safety checks, but you're not going to nuke us, you're not going to...
Yeah, I'm not going to go through the metal detector.
Right, right.
But you're not going to touch me or make me take my clothes off.
No, absolutely not, even or virtually or practically.
Yeah.
That's fine, but the TSA's got to go, and they've got to go. The sooner, the better. And once we achieve that victory, I feel that we will really have the wind behind us again, and you know, behind our backs, and we will be able to achieve many more victories against this tyranny. That's just one small victory if we could do this, but you know what, it's going to take all of us to stand together and say no.
Yeah, I'm not sure of those victories. I don't know how many we have. I think the only victories we have are our own personal struggles that we're working on getting over to become better and to do what the word in the Bible says. I think that's the only real victory we'll have, but I could be wrong.
Well, you know, look, we can't stop trying though, can we?
Of course not. Not at all. No, we can't give up. But the way things have been going, do you really think we have a chance of saving anything, this nation? I mean, even if we got rid of the TSA, you still got the DHS and 100,000 other new government agencies, secret spy contractors, and people you don't even know that are all part of this organization. They have ruined this. They've turned it into an authoritarian, totalitarian system using the most technologically advanced weapons and monitoring systems against us.
Right.
Even people who have no, who are innocent, people who just don't agree with them are listed as enemies.
That's correct.
And it's good. And Obama is in power to finish the job, turn this over to the international system, the UN, and that's the way. It says it's going to happen in the Bible. It's going to be a one-world government.
Right.
And it's going to be a beast system. And if people can't see how fast we're headed towards there, then you got to do a little more eye-opening.
No, look, it's not that I disagree, because I certainly agree with that. But I also think that you've got, as a Christian, it's your responsibility. You've got a certain responsibility to fight, to stand up for God, stand up for what's right, stand up for you know, what's Christian. Yeah, you pick up your swords, because literally pick up your sword or your armament because, and I'm looking here for the let's see here.
Going back to what we wrote about the SLAT terrorism,
yes,
training. I mean, who do they list as possible domestic terrorists? Anti-abortionists?
Well,
Christians.
Oh.
And they say anybody who uses the word God without a profanity after
it. Yeah, can you, the folks, go ahead and say that again.
They say there's an indicator you're a domestic terrorist if you say God without using a profanity after it.
How blasphemous can you get? Seriously. Now, if you have a bumper sticker. Now, remember the Mayak report from 2009? You recall that. It caused a big dust up back in 2009 when WikiLeaks leaked it out, calling people with the Rand Paul or Ron Paul bumper stickers as right-wing extremists and such. And then they retracted it and apologized and everyone. But the people who continued to assert that there were issues that there's still classifications. They are called kooks. People like us, oh, you're kooks. But then, see this slap training now. If you've got a bumper sticker, call to arms, for example, or get us out of the UN, out of the United Nations, right? Or know your rights or lose them.
Yeah.
If you love your country, the UN is not your friend. That's another one.
Yeah, and in the 2009 lexicon, right-wing extremism, they talk about patriots, Christians, constitutionalists.
Yeah.
If you have literature that states as much, you could be dangerous.
This, folks, this is so important because, you know, people think, well, hey, the MIAC's gone. No, it's not. It's federalized now. Now it's on a federal level. Now they're teaching this. And you think, well, I knew that. But no, you don't know the extent which is not. In fact, we are putting together an article right now that we'll post sometime after the show tonight to tell you exactly how deep this goes.
Yeah. And, you know, before we go to the break, I read this last week inside of Luke. Let me find it here. It's chapter 20, I think. And he talks about, you know, Jesus was asked about the last days. And it talks about all the earthquakes and the things that are going to change with the earth. And but he says, before that, you will be delivered up for my name's sake. You will be killed for his word.
And boy, isn't that literal. I mean, that's literal.
Yeah.
Because they are talking, I mean, in this training, they're not talking about merely arresting you. They're talking about how to neutralize you. In the last I knew, neutralize meant something more than just arresting you. So
yeah,
we're at the top of the hour, folks. I want to thank you for joining us on this Manic Monday, the first hour in the tank, in the can. We're back for two more hours right after these short messages.
And for those who joined us late, we had to reschedule our Sunday episode with the Insider. He had to reschedule, but it's going to be Friday. We're going to have Nathan Leal Thursday, and then Tom Horn on a special Sunday night show. Not going to want to miss those. Stay
with us. By the way,
survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
You better wake up fast and listen to this, America. The Obama campaign has launched attack squads disguised as truth teams dedicated to intimidating and silencing all political dissent carried over the internet that criticizes the Marxist Obama. Truth Squad specifically focused on covering up Obama's endless trail of lies, corruption, and subversion, and using the Gestapo power of our own government to police and censor the internet and shut down websites that dare to carry the real truth about Obama's Marxist coup. Remember the names of these Gestapo-style agencies at work right there in your neighborhood: KeepingHisWord.com, KeepingGOPHonest.com, and AttackWatch.com. KGB, SS, and Gestapo-style police state gangster organizations at work to silence the important voices of patriot dissent, some of which have already been shut down by Obama's orders. Adolf Hitler would have been proud. We're the 21st century Tea Party Patriots.
Hold on to your seats. The Hagman and Hagman flight is now taking off. Doug and Joe Hagman have cleared the runway of TSA agents, jihadists, political crackpots, and global elitists. Now get ready for some real news. Here they are, Doug and Joe Hagman.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report this Monday, January 7th, 2013. And it has been just a jam-packed beginning of the year when it's coming to news and things happening around the world. Things are not slowing down. Nobody expected them to. But we can see them, getting worse. And they are going to continue to get worse and worse until the evil... the spiritual evil that is running rampant, that is let loose on this earth, puts together what it needs to, to fulfill prophecy.
And I think with our, well, I know both Nathan Leal and Tom Horn. Nathan Leal is going to be talking on Thursday, and Tom Horn on Sunday will be talking about that very issue. So
yeah, it's. We have some great guests coming up, and it's just going to be a good week. And we have people we haven't even mentioned yet, other people, other guests that we're trying to get scheduled in there. And it should be a great 2 weeks, should be a great year the way it's going. As long as we have the ability to communicate, we will be doing so to the best of our ability, getting the best people on that can help us in these times where we need the spiritual discernment. But no matter which guest comes on, there's only one thing we need to refer to when looking for spiritual discernment, and that is the word, the words of Jesus himself. And because we see it. We see it happening today, the persecution. You told me you got to see an episode of Dragnet, an old Dragnet episode.
Yes.
And there was, was Joe came in and was saying, at the end of the show, he said, "It's unbelievable what these parents are."
Well, no, it was at the it was either the last episode of season one, which was in 1967, or the first episode of season two. I don't recall which. It was actually, got it out of the $5 bin at the anyway. The captain, the watch commander, talking to Joe Friday, saying it was a school situation. It was a gang in school, and they're talking about the lack of parenting at the time. Now, again, this is 1967. The watch commander said, "Well, what do you expect when you don't have parents at home and you've got the lack of values? And hey, even today, you've got the acceptance of homosexuality." And I thought, wow, I'd listened to that, and he continued that if it was played today during prime time on a network, there'd just be no way that would fly, and just to hear it and to see. So that was, 45 years ago, 46 years ago, maybe. Is my mouth right? Yeah, I guess it would be. And just in that less than a half a century, how far and how much and how deeply we have changed. And who do we have to thank or who do we have to blame for this? Obviously ourselves to some degree, but wouldn't it be the generation that embraced the great society? Wouldn't it be the media that touted this great society, this notion of the great society, the Cloward-Piven strategy, the socialists, the Fabian socialists, the communist people? To me, I think that it's pretty clear, and I think Joe McCarthy, if you read M. Stanton Evans' book, Blacklisted by History, it's a 600-page book, but it's worth every page. Joe McCarthy was right. Mm-hmm. Senator from 1950.
Yes, he was.
And the communist infiltration into our government, changing the complexion of our leadership, and of course, taking God out of schools and out of homes and churches, or out of the halls of government and schools, and affecting how it was discussed at home. And so, just imagine the last 40 some years now being put on steroids, and kind of over the next 4 years, what's going to happen to Christians and Jews and people, and even to a lesser extent, Muslims, because at the end, we are told, and I believe that this is supported by Scripture. Folks, look it up. I don't know, but I do believe that the one world government is going to also have a one world religion that's going to be a watered-down version of the three great religions. You cannot have three great religions. When I say great, I'm talking in terms of
the three historical,
three primary, historically recognized. Right.
Right.
I'm not,
right. Yeah, and they're moving towards it. I mean, you can see it now, the Chrislam, I'm only 29, so I haven't been around that long. But, you know, I was 19 when 9/11 happened. Before that, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as radical Islam, okay?
Well, there really isn't. You've got Islam, and then you've got apostates. You've got the followers of the Quran, or those who don't follow the Quran, which are the apostates. Radical Islam, or Islamists, is a PC term. And it should be looked upon that way. Now, some people will say, well, that's hate speech. Well, no, it's not. It's intellectually honest. There are no such things as, well, the radical Muslims are the ones that are not engaged in jihad as it's defined. The radical Muslims are the apostates. It's backwards to what you're being told. So, but that said, at the end of the day, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are going to be combined into one.
Yeah, there is a push toward a one world religion.
Right.
The UN is behind it.
Right.
And everybody knows about Lucius Trust. They have a role in it, and we don't know exactly how it will roll out and happen, but we know it will. And what's disturbing is that the apathy or indifference of the Christians, it's not tolerance, because you can't have tolerance for evil, or you can't have tolerance to give up your faith, you know? What they're doing with the Obamacare mandates, mandating that religious institutions give birth control regardless of their religious beliefs. When they do that, I mean, all bets are off anymore. If they can get away with that, they are going to be coming towards burning down the churches. They're going to be delivering us up, just like the Bible says, if we even get that far as a nation. They've been doing it across the world, killing thousands and hundreds of thousands of Christians a year, every year, all over the world. We're not anything more special. Why do you think it can't happen to us just as easy, just as quick, especially when we see what's happening today? I mean, it's almost a guarantee it's going to happen. and in the next few years, that people just want to go have fun and not worry about it.
It's going to happen. You're right. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. We're going to have to make some very difficult decisions on how we're going to handle the practical aspects of our lives. But the decisions to die for our religion, our faith, our belief in God, I mean, those should already be made. I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I'll stand right next to you, behind you, in front of you, if you're ready as well.
Right. And that sense of unity under the Lord is gone. People don't want to be part of anything that other people will look at as controversial or extreme.
Yes.
But it's not extreme. It's never been extreme until we are where we are today. And through subverting, through false flag events or whatever, subverting the mind control on the TV to wherever it's coming from, people have been softened in everything, in every aspect of their lives, in their faith, in their self-discipline, in anything. One of the best things you can do is deprive yourself of something for the Lord and do it right. I mean, that's what, you know, part of the having faith is, you know, knowing you'll be okay no matter what, as long as you have the Lord in your life. But people are on a whole different planet in America. They're okay if they have their TV or if they have their whatever satisfy them. Lovers of pleasure, lovers of self, instead of lovers of God. And we're seeing it perfectly, as it says in, I think it's in Corinthians. You know, it lists what is going to take place, how people are going to act in the end times, in the last days. And, I mean, I think I have it right here. It is dead accurate. I mean, how many people do you know that would rather, you know, do something for themselves than for someone else or for the Lord? You could ask 10 out of 10 churchgoers probably in some churches who would rather do things for themselves than for God. Or if they do it for God, they do it out of a sense of, oh, I guess I got to do this because I'm a Christian. You think Jesus is going to respect that when judgment day comes? I mean, we need to really think hard about what we're doing on a daily basis and why we're doing it and who we're doing it for. Because if we're not, then our mind is not in the right place.
I agree. And that's, you know, people, I received some emails this weekend from people saying, well, wouldn't it be better if you just did the news and analysis of the news and kept out of the Bible? And it kind of took me by surprise to get emails like that, because their thoughts were, well, you'd be more mainstream. We don't want to be mainstream. We want to be leaders. And we want to be on the right side of history, not only on the right side of history, but the right side of eternity.
Yeah. And I'm getting in the chat room, I want to thank you guys. We're getting a play-by-play of the interview on Pierce Morgan because we can't watch it. He's not composed, from what I understand. People are saying, you know, no one will listen to his ranting. But, you know, when we're in the situation we're in and the people don't see it, if yelling at them, talking to them doesn't work, if showing things to them doesn't work, if yelling at them doesn't work, if slapping them in the face with the evidence doesn't work, nothing will.
Look, my belief is,
I mean,
right or wrong, and I look, I don't, I mean, I've done television spots. I was on Cavuto, I don't know, a few years ago.
2007?
2006, I don't know, but whatever. But I've got to say this. You can never win by shouting. You can never win because they own the microphone. They own the airtime. They know the questions. So the only thing you can do is calmly, professionally, and very step-by-step state your case.
But how can you do that when you have people like Piers Morgan, people like Sean Hannity's, people, the O'Reilly's, the Ed Schultz, that make points with no common sense, that have no factual evidence to back up what they say?
Well,
they just blatantly lie.
No,
how can you keep your composure when you know what really is going on?
When
these people are deceiving millions every night.
But see, when you step into, and God bless Alex Jones for doing this. I mean, I have respect for the man. However, when you enter into that arena, and I'm saying this because I've been there, when you do enter into that arena, you know that you are at a disadvantage. They have the home field advantage. You are playing by their rules. And the only way that you can actually get your point across is by being just very composed. I mean, look at what I don't recall if it was the NRA or one of the national gun people who went up against Piers Morgan and never raised his voice. And I think Piers called him pathetic or
How much media attention did that get?
Well, what's the objective here? Is the objective to prevail in the argument?
No, the objective is to hopefully open one person's eyes to what's going on.
Well, how best can we do that? By ranting, by raving?
Well, whatever situation you're in, it's going to take something different. I mean, you're going to have to be, flexible. Nothing against Alex, but I've watched an interview of him on The View. The same thing, same kind of thing. The body language, we have it on now. We can see riling up.
Yeah.
But every situation calls for a different way of approaching the person. It depends on how they react to you.
Well,
if you're telling them the truth and you have the facts to back it up and the proofs to back it up, and they're calling you a liar, you shouldn't get crazy and call names, but you raise your voice, you can. I don't see a problem with that.
But there's a difference between passion, and I agree.
Right.
That, I mean, there should be a level of passion. But there's a big difference between passion and going over the top and being very forceful and kind of, having spittle come from your mouth.
Put yourself in the shoes of him, yourself in the shoes of going on live TV with an interview with Bill O'Reilly or Piers Morgan or any of these fake news anchor, New World Order loving people. Okay, could you sit there and have your composure? I don't know if I could for that long. I mean,
seriously, it would take everything within me. First of all, I don't know if I'd do that, but it would take everything in my power to sit there and to not lose my composure. But I would do my best to just make my points. And if he wanted to talk over me, I would. You know what? There's only one person that can talk at a time. And at the end of the day, at the end of the interview, if he comes off as a bully, as a schoolyard bully, then you win.
I don't know about that. How many chances do people in the alternative media really get to go on mainstream TV to talk about what's really going on?
Well,
when you do it, you have to do it all the way, or don't do it at all.
Well, boy, folks, you put yourself in that position. To everyone listening to this program, because certainly, we're no experts.
You turn it around, somebody comes on our show,
right?
And was yelling and screaming, depending on the context of the argument, I guess, or whatever we were talking about.
Right.
But it's not like that because we're not a mainstream government promoting propaganda spewing outlet, media outlet.
Right. Well, I understand. I just think that in this case, I just think back because I asked Orly Tates when she went on, who was that? Was it Ed Schultz or the Chris Matthews? I think it was Ed Schultz. Orly Tates.
Lawrence O'Donnell.
Lawrence O'Donnell, thank you.
Yeah, when he was just screaming at her.
Exactly. And I asked Orly, I said,
let me say this first. This is the Lawrence O'Donnell that Obama first released the receipt
of a birth certificate. It wasn't his real birth certificate. And they went on TV and said, you know, this is the birth certificate. There is no other document.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, this other, proven wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then this other document comes out, all questionable by lots of people, a lot of layers and whatever changes and the names and things wrong with the document. She comes on the show. As soon as the introduction's over, he's screaming in her ear, are you ready to apologize? You know?
Yes.
And he wouldn't let her talk.
And she took quite a left turn as well. I know he wouldn't let her talk, but she also, when she did talk, she raised an issue that was so far away from the issue that they were talking about. She raised the issue of the Social Security number rather than still addressing the certificate of live birth. And that just enraged him even more. But personally, I would not sit on the other end of a table or TV screen or monitor or whatever and be berated on national television. I just wouldn't do it. I would just say, you know what, thank you very much, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to you. I'm not going to, you know, be subjected to your nonsense. On the other hand, you look at Alex Jones. I mean, he's got something to say. He can hold his own. Believe me, he can hold his own. I have no doubt. But once again, I just go to the intellectual part of it. If you're going to have a reasonable, intelligent discussion, you just can't be screaming.
I say at this point, who cares? I mean, people, if they don't get it, they haven't got it from people talking to them or people showing them things, their families maybe. If they don't get it from this, or if this doesn't intrigue them to maybe look into a few things he says, nothing will.
And by the way, Alex and Rob and Chris, listening to this, if you're listening to this by rebroadcast, believe me, I've got the utmost respect for all of you. I really do. So don't think that I'm picking on you at all, because it takes a lot of fortitude to go up there and to get into the lion's den like that. So that said, apparently it's over now. But that said, I just want to let you know that, you know, our prayers were with you. Hopefully you did you changed some minds and hearts of some people, because, you know, we are at the fight of our life right now.
Yeah.
I
want to, Angie, you sent me something a week ago from the Columbine student's father. I got to read this.
Yeah.
This is fitting right now.
This is fitting.
There's a Columbine student's father 12 years later. Says, guess our national leaders didn't expect this. On Thursday, Daryl Scott, the father of Rachel Scott, a victim of the Columbine High School shootings in Littleton, Colorado, was invited to address the House Judiciary Committee's subcommittee.
And folks, you know who this guy is. You've seen him on TV. I know you know who this guy is.
Yeah. And what he said to our national leaders during this session of Congress was painfully truthful. They were not prepared for what he was to say, nor was it received well. It needed to be heard by every parent, teacher, politician, sociologist, psychologist, every so-called expert.
Zoologist.
These courageous words spoken by Daryl Scott are powerful, penetrating, and deeply personal. There is no doubt that God sent this man as a voice crying in the wilderness. The following is a portion of the transcript. Since the dawn of creation, there has been both good and evil in the hearts of men and women. We all contain the seeds of kindness or the seeds of violence. The death of my wonderful daughter, Rachel Scott, and the death of that heroic teacher and the other 11 children who died.
By the way, just let me interject something here. Please, everyone, pray for people like that. There should be no parent who should bury a child. No parent. That should never happen.
Well, it does. It does happen.
And I know listeners out there.
It happens for a reason.
Yeah, I know. I know
but,
listeners
yeah.
out there. Just keep people like that in your prayers. Go ahead.
Yeah, he says, and the other 11 children who died must not be in vain. Their blood cries out for answers. The first recorded act of violence was when Cain slew his brother Abel in the field. The villain was not the club he used, neither was it the NCA, the National Club Association. The true killer was Cain, and the reason for the murder could be found in his heart. In these days, before the Columbine tragedy, I was amazed at how quickly fingers began to be pointed at groups such as the NRA. I'm not a member of the NRA. I'm not a hunter. I don't even own a gun. I am not here to represent or defend the NRA because I don't believe that they are responsible for my daughter's death. Therefore, I do not believe they need to be defended. I believe they had any. I don't believe they had anything to do with Rachel's murder. Otherwise, I'd be their strongest opponent. I am here today to declare Columbine was not just a tragedy. It was a spiritual event that should be forcing us to look at where the real blame lies. Much of the blame lies here in this room. Much of the blame lies behind the pointed fingers of the accusers themselves.
Boy, that's a strong statement, saying much of the blame lies in this room.
Right. And he goes on to write a poem. I'm just going to read snippets of this poem. Your laws ignore our deepest needs. Your words are empty air. You stripped away our heritage. You've outlawed simple prayer. Now gunshots fill our classrooms, and precious children die. You seek for answers everywhere, and you ask the question why. You regulate restrictive laws through legislative creed, and yet you fail to understand that God is what we need. And he said this in front of the
effective.
He said this in front of the Congress, yeah. And he was, and they were thinking he was going to come there to speak out against these shootings and
surprise,
yeah. And it goes on from there, but you get the picture. The guy's right. It's God we need in our school.
It goes back to what Steve.
It's God we need in the parenting.
I love Steve Quayle's statement about you know, you cannot. There are no political solutions for spiritual problems.
Right.
And that's what we have in this country. It's a matter of it's a spiritual problem. It's the problem is not fixable by legislation or irreparable. It cannot be repaired through legislation. We can't. And let's be honest with everyone. What is the answer? It's bringing back the nuclear family. It's not the redefinition of the nuclear family. It's bringing it back. It's bringing back God. It's bringing back the sanctity of marriage and the sanctity of life. How can people, and I'm not going to preach on this, but how can people consider life sacred when 3,000 plus murders take place a day of unborn children? My goodness.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just want to say this. I'm going to be on Rick Wiles' show tomorrow, I think. I think it'll air tomorrow.
Well, I'm always the last to know these things.
Well, you're actually the second to know.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good. I haven't heard, I listened to the one show he did with T.D. Hale last week, which was good.
Yeah.
So we had to contact Mr. Hale because I'd really like to get him on. You know what you're going to be talking about?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
But yeah.
And I'm not even sure. I know that he does recordings. I suspect it'll be tomorrow night. It'll air tomorrow as well. But I believe it'll be about the information I've got from the source from within the DHS.
I got a serious piece of news here from the LibertyBeacon.com. It's entitled, "The U.S. government panel now pushing vaccinations for all, no exceptions." Oh, it's from Natural News also. An advisory panel for the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that every person be vaccinated for the seasonal flu yearly, except in a few cases where the vaccine is known to be unsafe. "No one should say, should I or shouldn't I," said the CDC specialist Anthony Floor. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices voted 11-0 with one absentation to recommend the yearly flu vaccination for everyone except for children under the age of 6 months whose immune systems have not yet developed for vaccinations to be safe. And people with egg allergies or other health conditions that are known to make flu vaccines hazardous. If accepted by the CDC, this recommendation will then be publicized to doctors and other health workers.
Yes.
Current CDC recommendations call for the yearly vaccination of all children over the age of 6 months, all adults over the age of 49, healthcare workers, people with chronic health problems, and anyone who cares for a person in one of these groups. These recommendations cover 85% of the population.
So how can they possibly, and folks, I mean, look, yeah, can they, how can they possibly enforce this?
Okay, there was a guy from Oklahoma. I don't know if he was a, he was a politician. I think it was Oklahoma. I have the video. I'll have to show you later. Where he talked about it's already in place. They have the vaccinations in place. They have the ready to set it up to the point where you can't travel. If you travel and you don't, are not wearing that little special thing that says you got vaccinated, well, guess where you're going?
And
if you say no.
Okay, listeners, how do you feel about that? Sorry. I just, you know, at this point, is there a law, Joe, that's on the books that says you must be vaccinated?
Absolutely not. You have the right to be free from the body. God designed us so our immune system will take care of problems, illnesses, and he has a plan for us.
So, but I know that there, okay, is there a law, for example, in your state, wherever you're at, that to send your child to school, that your child must have certain vaccinations?
Yeah, we see healthcare workers being fired left and right who refuse to get the shot, even when they say the shots aren't even that effective sometimes.
Right, right. I just can't imagine this. And folks, maybe you're in the same boat with me too, because I talked to Keith Hansen about this over the weekend. I said, I cannot wrap my brain around the fact, for example, about, you know, and we had to stop talking. I had to stop talking about this gun issue, this gun grab. Are you telling me that we're going to have SWAT teams come into our homes to grab our guns? You know, so are you telling me, Joe, that we're going to have vaccinations? There are people, you know, forcing us into vaccinations?
Well, there has been lots of, yes, there is lots of different things, pieces of information, videos of actual politicians talking about the vaccination, the forced vaccinations. Well, how does it work? I'll tell you exactly how it works. At Drudge's this morning, there was a big map about the flu season, okay? It says epidemic.
Right. In 41 states. Yeah.
But there was, like, only a few cases of people who died. And it is said that people do die from the flu. They die from the flu every year. So how do we know?
I said the flu where I thought I was going to die, but
how do we know that it's not a different strand of the flu that came out of a U.S. government laboratory, like the anthrax that came after 9/11?
Oh, you know what? Okay, stop right there. Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you this question. Should we do a show on the anthrax, 2001 anthrax attacks? Should we get involved in the investigation of that? Do you think it's important?
It's important, but we shouldn't do a show on it. We should incorporate it in a show
research
with the vaccines, because there are, when you have somebody like the guy in Dr. Oz, I always refer to this because I saw this clip on ABC, whatever it is, News in the Morning with Diane Fine Sawyer, whatever
Sawyer.
Her name is.
Yeah, Diane Sawyer.
She's asking them up, people should get flu shots, yes, yes, yes. Would you give your kids flu shot? No.
We
that tells me all I need to know. I mean, and he's not the only one. These things, different vaccinations have different chemicals in them. We know that the United States citizens and military especially have been used as guinea pigs to test different chemical compounds. And who knows how the fluoride in the water with the chemtrails and heavy metals in the air mix when you get that shot in your arm.
Right. And look, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
No, it's just, it boggles my mind that they push these things like these vaccines on you. They sit here and I saw a study this weekend. What was it? High fructose corn syrup makes you fat. Well, why are they making everything organic illegal and filling the stores? 92% of grocery store shelves have stuff with high fructose corn syrup in it.
Correct. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So why should I trust the government when it's already they're looting the country, they're destroying it by design, they have written plans on how they want to kill everybody, they have built up secret police forces, secret camps,
yes,
hundreds of millions of rounds, billions of rounds of ammo, that I'm supposed to take their word for when it comes to my health?
Yeah, it's not right. And if you can sense my frustration, I'm very frustrated because it's at some level you get to the point where, okay, how much more can you take? How much further can we be pushed? And I'm sure everyone, to some extent, listening to this program feels that way. Now the question becomes, what are we going to do about it? It's kind of like, what are we going to do about it?
We have one protector. We have one refuge.
We do.
We still have to go through what we have to go through here on Earth.
Let me share with you what my spirit is telling me that we need to do. I believe that each one of us, like I always say, if you're listening to this program, you're a leader. So, okay. Now, as a leader, think of a nice green lawn in the summertime. And little daisies or little weeds kind of poke up every so often above the natural green of the lawn, little clover things maybe, or dandelions. You're that dandelion among all that green. You're the dandelion sticking up. So you know that by being a leader, by having the views you have, by being a crusader for Christ, and I didn't mean anything, by the way, by that except the words, what I said. You know you're a dandelion. And what gets cut first? When the lawnmower comes by. Well, the higher the dandelions get cut, or the higher blades of grass get cut first. So you're taking a risk. But my heart tells me that at this point, we now have to start getting together and organizing at least at a community level. We don't have to take, for example, there doesn't have to be any one specific leader, but we all have to work our positions. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Work our positions. If you're in Topeka, Kansas, and by the way, I want to say hello to Topeka.
Let me raise this question.
Yes.
And I know how I feel about it because, whatever happens, but you approach your neighbors. You say, you mention things are getting bad. We're going to need to stick together. You know, things might happen where we're going to need each other.
Right.
Next thing you know, your neighbor's turning you in.
But, I think it's how you approach them and if it's in a conversational tone. Because I don't think
it'll matter.
But you know what? The people listening to this program, the majority of people, and I've talked to them, you've got the gift of discernment. I believe that the people listening to this program, you know when to talk and when to shut up. Right? I think you do. I think you know when it's safe to talk and when not to. I believe that's... And see, you, Joe, you often talk about, and others talk about, the little spirit, the voice inside. You have to listen to that voice.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I think that voice is going to be saying. Clear for takeoff. Or, hey, don't do it. You know, so to me, now, is there a chance of betrayal? There's never been a greater chance for betrayal. And is it risky? Certainly it's risky. But what's the alternative? Are you going to be able to fight this by yourself? The answer is no. Of course, you're going to have the armor of Ephesians, the armor of God. But are you going to be able to fight this by yourself in a practical sense? What's coming? No. Are you going to be able to stand up to a 6-7-man SWAT team at your door? Absolutely not.
No.
And it's just not going to happen.
Like you always tell me, you need to pick your battles.
That's true. And now, does that mean you don't fight? No, of course not. Not at all. That Holy Spirit is going to be talking in a big way.
You find yourself in the position where you're looking at people at your door like that, you don't go grab your gun.
What do you do?
you pray to God, and He'll take care of you.
Well, if no,
he
that,
has
okay.
a plan for you.
Yeah, but in a sense,
the people who are relying on their guns more than they're relying on God are going to perish.
But wait, that's like saying, Joe, it's like to me, what you just said there is like saying, if you're in the middle of the street and you see a bus coming at you at 60 miles an hour.
No, that's different. I'm talking about, I mean, if we're talking about armies and people, army groups coming door to door to take you away, take your guns.
Right.
Would you rather not go willingly and maybe save somebody along the way before you die? Because in the Bible it says when they deliver you up, you don't have to worry about what you're going to say because He'll put it in your mouth.
Well, I know Marianne had sent some really great information, and others did, about this, you know, the responsibility to protect your family and yourself.
Yeah,
and from a Christian perspective.
It says right here, before all these things, they shall lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues, into the prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake, and shall it turn to you for a testimony. Settle it therefore in your heart, not to meditate before what you shall answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist.
Well, you know, I might, at this point, folks, and this is where we mentioned, I think, earlier about Bank of America. Did we not talk about that?
Correct. Yeah, there's a new story today.
Okay.
Bank of America.
This is one of the reasons why it perhaps might not make a difference. And here's the reason why. Bank of America is, well, we know what Bank of America is. They, in my view, they want to run down the Constitution of the United States of America, but despite their name. And Bank of America has frozen licensed gun manufacturers' deposits, stating that we believe you should not be selling guns on the internet. Now, this was a rumor, I think, last week, as you were telling me, Joe, and now it's been confirmed that American Spirit Arms I'm looking at this very poorly crafted email, which I apologize, but it looks like there was a confirmation that American Spirit Arms did confirm this.
I got an article right here. It's pulled
up
here
now. Okay.
Bank of America.
Okay, it says, my name is Joe Strachman, owner of American Spirit Arms. I wanted to share my recent experience with Bank of America.
I mean, that's different from this guy I got.
Okay. So my point is this. We might not have, I mean, there might not be a shot fired because think about this.
No, I'm sorry, American Spirit Arms. Right.
Okay. Those of you who own businesses, or even if you just work for a living, like we, I mean, you just get a paycheck. What would happen at that point if, for example, they say, well, you know what, we're going to freeze your bank account. They won't have to fire a shot to take you out economically. And if you're taken out economically, what are you going to do at that point to feed your family? Wouldn't that seem like a better route to take than to send a SWAT team? Because obviously there are people out there committed to die in their homes or at their driveways to fight against a team
of
soldiers.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not telling people to just hand over their guns and give up. If I see my family or my neighbors getting attacked and I have an opportunity to help them, I'll do it in a second.
Well, and
if it comes to me personally, if it's just me,
if it's you alone,
right? Yeah, I don't have it. I'm not. Those who try to save their lives will lose it. Those who lose their lives for others will surely save it, is what the Lord said. And
we'll get into that more at a later time because there's a spiritual component to that. But I personally believe that God has told us, or God has instructed us, that we need to. We do need to fight and protect ourselves, protect our family, in that vein. But with this Bank of America, if this bank I've dealt with merchants over the internet, for example, we have a merchant account where we take MasterCard and Visa. Well, that was from a, actually because of the textbook I wrote and colleges were buying them and they required the MasterCard and Visa system. So anyway, the having that system, if there was a, you had to qualify, and you had to jump through hoops. So folks that have businesses, you know what I'm talking about. There's certain things. I can see where the bank could shut you down and freeze your bank account or freeze your merchant account if they believe that you are doing something against the terms of the bank or of whatever merchant you're dealing with, merchant account you're dealing with. And that's one way. And think about that. Think how quickly or think how effective that could be. So there are a number of ways that this could play out without a shot being fired.
And the weird thing about this whole thing is the owner says that his sales have jumped 500% in their e-commerce, bringing Bank of America more money.
Well,
but yet.
Is it, now, I have to, and I read that, but what we have experienced is that our website orders have jumped 500%, causing our website e-commerce processing large deposits. Okay. All right. Well, this threw up a huge red flag with Bank of America. Okay, I see what this gentleman's saying. In other words, that spike in sales, and they will do that. They will monitor, for example.
Monitor, not freeze and terminate your account.
Well, no, it,
unless
actually.
You have to be proven guilty of something before.
No. Okay, if you, let me just say this. If you have an e-commerce account, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure if you ever have this experience, if you ever want to open a business or have a business and you've got an e-commerce account, and it could be authorized.net or whatever the gateway to your merchant account, MasterCard, Visa, whatever that gateway might be. You've got to sign an agreement. You've got to say, okay, this is what we're selling. You might be selling chili dogs or food, or you might be selling books, or you might be selling books and DVDs. If all of a sudden you start selling Volkswagens, they can terminate your account, okay, because you signed, there's a very narrow area that in terms, it's the terms of service. Now, what they did here, however, is they froze this business's money. That is ramping up. I mean, I could see them saying, look, we're no longer going to do business with you. Find someplace else. But to freeze the money, holy cow. That, to me, is a new level. And obviously, where's the potential for redress? The Justice Department. Good luck with that. So,
I'm going to switch subjects and go back. I'm reading the wording on the TV from the Piers Morgan. He's still talking. He's talking about the American democracy. And he said, how scary is it that this man, Alex Jones, I felt threatened. And he has millions of listeners every day.
I would say Alex Jones probably has more viewers and listeners than Piers Morgan does. I don't like to condone
violence, but I probably would have slapped Piers Morgan.
No, you know what? Again,
just out of principle.
I remember back in, I don't know, this is like early 90s, and I don't know how many people like have seen celebrities and met them or wanted, for example, to maybe get an autograph for a child, okay? I was in Las Vegas, and there was a gentleman walking by, and my wife says, "Hey, you know, I liked him acting in this particular show." I said, "Yeah, I'll go up and ask him if I could grab an autograph." Now, I will not bother people if they're eating or if they're certainly if they're involved in something or if they're talking or whatever. But this guy was just walking down the hallway. And I must say, walking rather slowly, and I'm not going to name the person. And I said, "Excuse me, would you mind, you know, giving my wife an autograph here, signing this for my wife?" And he looked at me and said, "I don't have time." Now, I said, fine, you know, thank you. I didn't mean to bother you. I mean, that would left it at that. I'm not sure where I was going with that, with the story, but...
I forgot who you said you were asking an autograph.
No, I didn't name the person. But I guess it speaks to the I guess, when, for example, Piers Morgan and others, I guess I was trying to make the point of they've got this this thing inside their head where they think there's something very special. And they're just like us. Just because they're on television doesn't make them any different. They still bleed. They still, you know, have bodily functions. I mean, it just... So when you get to that point, that level of... And that's, I have to believe as well that there is a mindset of the progressives, communists, socialists, fascists, that they inherently believe that they are special. Even to the point, and I heard this by Gary Bell, A View from Space is his radio show. It's on Saturday nights from 8 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It's 6:40 a.m. Toronto. I recommend anyone to listen to that. His name again is Gary Bell, but the elitists, the Illuminati, the people in power have this idea that they are different, not only different, better different, but different, like they've got special DNA. Now think about that for a moment. Like the DNA of the bloodline of Christ. I mean, that DNA kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And we're nothing but, you know,
no, we're
water feeders.
Yeah, useless eaters, as they say. And yes, we are going to be taking calls the whole third hour to answer your question in the chat room, Ruth. So give us a call at 661-244-9839, and we will take your call in the next hour. And
just
anybody else that we can fit in.
Why don't we do this? Because in the ladies' zone, we do have AM stations that do simulcast us. We're getting close to the top of the hour. Why don't we take a break now, and that way we'll have a little bit more time for your calls.
Yeah,
is that right with you?
What we'll do is I'll play a one-minute clip of Ted Cruz talking about Obama trying to scare people about with the financial apocalypse, and then we'll go to a quick commercial and come right back. That's all right with you? We'll do that?
Yeah, let's rock and roll with this.
All right.
This is from Sunday, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I don't know when the interview was. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. We'll be right back after this quick clip of Representative Ted Cruz talking about Obama's financial Armageddon collapse, and quick word from our sponsors and your phone calls coming up next.
Senator, are you willing to risk default on our debt by taking the debt ceiling battle right to the limit?
No, and let me be very clear about this. I do not support default on the debt. We should never default on the debt. And the only players in Washington who are threatening default on the debt are President Barack Obama and Harry Reid. This is an issue, and earlier in this show you played the president threatening default. In any given month, federal tax revenues are approximately $200 billion a month. Interest on the debt is $30 to $40 billion a month. There is plenty of revenue to service the debt, and any responsible president would have stood at that podium and said, under any circumstances, whatever happens with the debt ceiling, we will always pay our debt. We will never default on the debt. And the reason the president isn't doing that is he's trying to scare people. He is trying to raise this specter of a financial apocalypse.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines, you just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's canadafreepress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Eileena Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at canadafreepress.com. Now mobile friendly, follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
Doug Hagman, one guy that doesn't need a bullhorn to get your attention.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Welcome back to our third and final hour. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. This is live. Today is the seventh day of January 2013.
You could have saved that and said the first month, seventh day.
I could say, yeah. Folks, you are listening to both Doug and Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're going to be taking your calls this hour, 661-244-9839. That's 661-244-9839.
And for the last time, in case people have joined us late, can you give the schedule for
the
week?
Yeah. And by the way, folks, if you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, we're in the process of updating it. Like I said, remember, this weekend we'd have time. Well, how time flies. But we are in the process of updating it. So we have a new section on the menu bar. In fact, the menu bar is going to change radically. But a new section, upcoming radio show guests and special programs. You can always check there, because as soon as we schedule a guest and lock the guest in, we'll put that up there. But this week, Thursday, we are going to welcome Nathan Leal from The Watchman's Cry. This gentleman was requested by numerous people, including Karen from Rome, Italy, who's listening live. I want to say hello to Karen in Rome, Italy. And on Friday, this is the program that we were to have on Sunday, yesterday, that was canceled because of this Financial Insider's schedule. That's going to take place on Friday from 9 till midnight Friday, okay? So Thursday, Nathan Leal from The Watchman's Cry. Which Watchman's Cry? The link is right on there at HomelandSecurityUS.com. And then Friday, Steve Quayle and his Financial Insider. The information, by the way.
And then Sunday.
Oh, and Sunday, Tom Horn.
3-hour special, 9 to midnight also.
Yes,
same time as Friday.
Right. And Tom Horn wrote with Chris Putnam the book Petrus Romanus, and what a tremendous book that was. I read that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I haven't had a chance, but you gave me this information and things to read tonight, and
yes.
We'll be doing that this week for sure.
I want to say this as well. Like I said, the we're going to be making some really huge additions to the website. We're putting together our resource library for you. We're populating that right now as well. So some good things happening on the website. The subject of Thursday is going to be about Obama's inauguration. That's going to be like a primary subject. There's some things that are planned. You can visit watchmanscry.com and get a flavor, early flavor of that program as well. And we've got other people lining up, or that we will line up and put on that page when appropriate. So with that, we can go to phone calls, and thank you for your patience and for listening to the program, each and every one of you.
All right. We're going to go to area code 417. 417, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Doug. Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
all doing great. I just want to let you know that here in Missouri, we've been watching and listening to you guys for about 6-7 months, I guess. And just want to say God bless you guys. You do a fantastic show. And, boy, I appreciate what all you guys do. I really do.
I thought, caller, I thought perhaps you were going to say that you want us to pay your therapy bills, but because of that. But
I do have a question for you. As far as the time frame, as far as gun confiscation and all that, what is your gut feeling on that? I know you guys can't give a point of a time and date and all that stuff. I understand that. But what's your time frame? Are you thinking 60, 90 days, or what you think?
You know, that's a great question. I think that end of March, beginning of April time frame is going to be critical for a number of things, the number of issues, the number, including but not limited to the gun thing. Now, I don't know. I mean, that's my best guess, and that's all it is a guess.
Well, sure.
You know, it's a guess based on science, you know, some information and analysis.
Sure.
I really think we need to watch the dollar. I really think we need to watch the dollar. And when the economic collapse hits, I think that that's going to play into a lot of what takes place with the gun.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate you answering that. And I also wanted to say that you guys keeping the Bible in is very important. That's just my little
Absolutely.
Two pennies worth. And $1.50, in my opinion, gets you coffee some places. But that's, to me, is very important, have the Bible in on the radio show.
Well, thank you. No, and we would never, ever, ever, ever do a show without doing it through a biblical and scriptural worldview. Absolutely never. No, you can't do it. You'd be disingenuous.
And if you guys don't mind, I'm going to send you a songwriter, and I'm going to send you a song. The chorus part is what I want you to really listen to on the song that I send you. It's called Let Freedom Ring, and it talks about Vietnam and Korea and the different wars in the verses, but on the chorus part, I want you guys to hear that and see what you thought of it, and if you guys ever want to play it, play it. I'm not trying to get money. I'm not trying to do any. I don't want anyone recognition. I just want you to hear the words.
Oh, we'd love to. We'd love to. Please send it along, and we'll play it on air, and absolutely. Yes, love to.
I just want you guys to hear it, because I think you would identify to the words to that course.
Okay.
So
I'll
send
it to deal.
One of you guys. I just send you, Joe, be one of you, and God bless you guys. I know you got other people there, but just wanted to, never had called in before, but my wife and I listened to you, and I told her, I said, I'm going to call in and talk to them guys.
Well, tell your wife hello for us, and God bless you, and thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, call anytime.
All right, our prayers with you guys. God bless you guys.
God bless you.
Too. Have a good night.
I'm excited to get John. I'm excited to get that. That's going to be kind of fun to listen to and to play.
I'm looking at my numbers list trying to.
There are some very talented. I got to tell you, there's some talented people. We have listeners that have written books and have written songs and sung songs and just a wonderful blend of talent in our listening audience.
Yeah, it's great. You know, we are definitely blessed by the people who listen to us.
So, before you go to a call, I did have a conversation with another talk show host. It's not Keith Hansen. No, it's not. There's another talk show host who said, happened to catch a couple of your programs. And this gentleman is out on the West Coast, and I don't know if I know that people out on the West Coast would recognize this person's name, but he said, You know, one thing that impressed me was the your callers. And I said, well, how so exactly? I mean, wanting more information, because obviously this person's pretty successful. And he said the level of knowledge of the people who listen to the program. For example, you could be talking about, well, I'll just throw this out there, Illuminati. The amount of knowledge that people have about that subject is incredible. They're able to keep up with, you could throw out, it's like a college course. Whereas a normal, like an AM radio station drive time might be a high school senior class. This is a college audience that we're talking to. It's much more sophisticated. You see, that's what I noticed. So kudos to everyone listening and people who've called in. I think that's a great compliment to you folks.
Yeah. We're going to move right along here. Area code 250, we're coming to you now. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hi, Doug and Joe. God bless you both.
Good evening.
Hello?
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just, you know what, you caught me taking a swig of coffee there. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report. How's that for coof and integrity? You're not integrity, but anyway, what's on your mind?
Anyway, I keep hearing, you know, the where did it all go wrong statement, and I honestly believe that it all went wrong when people stopped going out in their communities, their churches, their town halls, their meetings, you know, really holding the politicians face to face. And now they've got us stuck in our homes, listening to the radio, watching the TV, the internet, and more they want to be in our homes instead of us being in our government buildings enforcing the laws, whether it be the laws of God or the laws of the land. And I really believe that's a lot where it all went wrong. And as far as what you guys have said about, you know, us being persecuted in God's name, and, you know, that's reality. It's coming. They're already doing it. You know, the Bible doesn't say we're going to be not persecuted in God's name. We are going to be persecuted in God's name. So I really believe that that's coming down the pipe. It's already happening. And as far as the guns go, I honestly don't think it really matters at this point. If people haven't stood up and guns yet, sorry about that, if people haven't stood up and used their guns yet, they're not going to. They really aren't going to. These guys like to play it like a chess match. They don't like to bring the hammer down until they've got you in checkmate. So, you know, there's really few instances where they get desperate and try to push things through that they don't already have you locked down on. But, you know, America's last bastion of hope, and it's about to fall. It's fallen. It's already fallen. And I just, we're here, guys. We're here.
Yeah. Can I ask your first name?
My name's Jeff.
Jeff, okay. The reason I just want to write that down, because Jeff, you said something that to me is incredibly profound. Two things. What you said about the leaders, the elected officials, they don't want us in their places. They want to be in our homes, and that's kind of where we're at. You're exactly right. And the other thing that you said is about the guns. To me, see, if this was 1775 or 4 or 3 or 2 back then, we'd already be shooting, wouldn't we? I mean,
that's right.
Is what
you'd be
what
in the streets
saying.
Already. You'd be at your government, well, your government buildings. It's not theirs, it's yours. You would already be down there. You'd be in their faces. You would have everybody would have a rifle or a pistol or whatever firearm, and they'd be saying, "No, you're criminals, get out." It's not happening, though. It's not going to happen. And the next step isn't in your home. After they're in your home, which they already really are, after they're in your home, it's going to be in your head. And that's the mark of the beast. That's what's coming. That's what's next. They want to be in your temple, your body, your personal house.
Wow. Jeff, I cannot argue with anything. I got to tell you, You got me thinking there. They brought the battle to us, successfully kept us out of our homes or out of our buildings, and they've infiltrated our homes. And I think I do think you're right with the gun issue. That settles right with me. So and wanting to get in our heads, that's the next step. And to a large extent, they already are, aren't they?
Yep.
Wow. And you've just proved the conversation I had with the talk show host about the college level intellectual conversations. What a great call. Anything else, my friend?
No. God bless you both. Thank you very much. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right, sir. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joe, incredible. I mean, very articulate, right on the money. And isn't that something? Isn't that something? Isn't he right? Jeff is correct. Where they have really locked us out of our own buildings.
Of course.
And kept us in our homes. Or if nothing else, kept us out of their buildings. Wow.
No, and things have just begun. The Federal Reserve, as we talked about, QE3, printing money to buy mortgage-backed securities. Is the Federal Reserve going to own your mortgage just because they have the illegal, unconstitutional authority of making money out of thin air?
You know, one, I love to read, folks, and one book that I have to recommend, it's you can order it off of Amazon. You won't. I don't think it's in print. I don't think you're going to find it in any bookstore. Maybe a secondhand bookstore, or you know, a used bookstore, or someplace that would have rare books. But The Secrets of the Federal Reserve by Eustace Mullins. The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. This was this was originally done back in I think it was in the 70s. And it was redone in 91. It's just an unbelievable book. And it walks you through the Federal Reserve system from Jekyll Island through the Federal Reserve Act, through the London connection, the Hitler connection, and the World Wars, and right into the congressional expose. It took place back, I'm going to say, I think it was in the 60s. I've got to say, what a tremendous book that is. So if you want to learn about the Federal Reserve, it's called Secrets of the Federal Reserve, The London Connection by Eustace Mullins. Highly recommended. Of course, we don't get any money for pushing books, but we'd like to keep our audience informed. Joe?
Yeah. All right. I thought we had callers still on. I was in my own little dreamland there.
Yeah, you were.
I was looking at, I was reading the Drudge Report, a tanker hit the San Francisco Bridge. Ship tanker hit the bridge, but it doesn't look that bad. Also, it says there's a title, Computer Craze Giving Kids Cancer. And that's something we're definitely going to have to look into. But let's go back to calls.
All right.
While we are waiting.
What are we waiting for? Pizza to be delivered or what?
All right. We're going to go to Donna next. Thanks for holding your patience. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very well.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Hello?
Yes, I said Joe's excellent. I'm doing very well.
Oh, okay. I was just at Future Conference in Dallas. I just got home, in fact, tonight, and my computer went down. I can't get my Kindle, so I had to listen to you on my phone. Having said that, I was at the conference, and one of the guys that work for Fox, I won't mention names, but he's written a book called Eye to Eye. I'll leave it at that and let you figure out who it is. We have the whole presentation, which is still the left-right and kind of pushing the got to get the Republican kind of thing going again, and I'm kind of past that. And then they had a Q&A at the end, and I stood up and I said, you know, given the cloud-piven strategy, I have a hard time saying that, concept that Obama seems to be bringing into the White House, is it even possible that we're going to have elections in, you know, the coming up 2016? And that was one of three questions, but the thing I got was a political answer. In fact, the question I asked was totally avoided, as if I didn't even ask the question, and side-skirted and went into something that I didn't even ask. Having said that, I thought, you know, I was kind of upset about the fact that I don't like political answers. I would rather I don't know, I don't know what you're talking about, or don't answer the question, or I don't want to answer that question. I would have preferred that. However, I thought, well, okay, whatever. It was really quite interesting because it was a couple minutes later, I was in the hallway, you know, how people are running around at conferences. An older couple came up to me, and we were and the gentleman said to me, he goes, "That was a very good question you asked." And he was very impressed with the question. And he said, "I'm very aware of what you were talking about." And he didn't answer your question. So he got the message, and they invited me to eat with them. And it was nice. And, you know, because you sometimes when you ask questions and you think, well, I'm not really doing any good, nobody's listening. Yet this one couple did listen. And I met Doc while I was there. He's very nice. And the conference was very good.
Doc Marquis? Is that who
he was there at the conference, met him, very nice man, and it was a good conference, other than the fact that I, you know, felt like, you know, some of the questions weren't asked. There was a lot of different theories as to what's going on in terms of, you know, people have way many views. I tend to think Doc may have had some of his views. I agreed more with him in terms of the Illuminati and what they're leading up to in his presentation, which you can have him on. He'll let him tell you, but it was very good. So I'm kind of out over the place because I had to listen to you on my phone because my computer, which I just had serviced, there shouldn't be anything wrong with it. It just won't turn on. And I was doing research the other day, and it just shut off on me. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I tried to do it on the Kindle, and the Kindle wouldn't do it either. So I don't know what's going on with my electronics in my house. The Kindle was working quite fine at the hotel. But I got home, it's not working, and the only way I could listen to you was on the phone. So I'm sorry about that phone call. I'm kind of rambling. A little weird.
That's all right. But just to be clear, if I understand this right, you posed your question that was not answered to, and you don't have to name the person, but to a did you say a Fox reporter?
Yeah, he was a reporter for Fox. He was doing a presentation on the, you know, coming world. The presentation seemed to be focused around that sort of, you know, you got to get in there, kind of geared towards the next election kind of thing. It seemed to be going in that direction.
Okay.
We got to get those people in, talk to them. And I'm past that. I'm not left-right. I don't know if it's even possible. I don't even know if we're going to have another election. You know, I'm kind of past that. And I'm more at the point now where with the economic situation that we're facing, and that's why I brought up the Cloward and Piven strategy, the fact that, you know, we are going deeper and deeper into debt, and our banks are not as solvent as we think they are. And I wanted to know, how do you propose that is going to, you know, what do you see that happening in the future? Do you see that becoming a problem? And why isn't Fox News covering this? It's not like, you know, rocket science. It's pretty easy to see. And I didn't get an answer. However, the good news is...
Amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah. I said the good news, at least two people got it.
Well, you know, and Donna, I got to tell you, I think that's how we're going to be able to advance our positions it's not, you know, it's going to be people like that and people that you least expect that will come up to us. When we discuss something, we might be at an old-fashioned cocktail party or something, and you might be talking to someone, and the person you're talking to might not get it, but that person that's standing 2 or 3 feet away from you, seemingly, you know, ignoring you or not listening to you, might overhear you and come up to you and say, you know, I agree with you. And I think that's how we're going to advance our position and save, literally save, lives, hearts, minds, and souls. I believe that. And Steve and I, Steve Quayle and I were talking about that. It may be from a different direction. So your words were not, well, obviously your words were not wasted.
Oh, and to let you know, Joe, I was in the airport and another woman, because she started speaking with me about Colorado's marijuana law, which is a diversion, you know, again, and the shootings. And I looked at her and said, you know, and I shared it with her openly. I said, you know, we've taken God out of the schools. The kids that did the Columbine shooting, you know, were wearing natural selection T-shirts, even though that wasn't really mainstream news, but they were. And then I proceeded to say, when you take God out of the schools, you tell kids they're made from an accident, like they're nothing except slime that evolved into something. And then we wonder why we're having the problems. I don't think marijuana is the primary issue here. And because it went from marijuana to driving to shooting, you know, how conversations go. I said, I think our primary problem is that nobody knows God anymore in schools. And we don't, you know, I had to memorize the preamble to the Constitution in my sixth grade class. I said, they don't do that anymore. So this is another conversation. As I was traveling, I was talking to people. So I thought that was good because she sat and looked at me for a few minutes and stared. And I said, you know, when you take God out of everything and we're just a nothing but an accident and we wonder why we have a depraved society. And we talked a little bit about the French Revolution and how those people at that particular time were all the same, you know, religion, as Anne Barnhart stated in her Vendée. And that was very telltelling in the sense that they were all the same religion, but once that proto-Marxism kind of concept and godlessness entered into one group, they became vicious.
Yes.
Vicious. And her ending with flashing on our society and you don't think it could happen, that really touched me. It left an impression like, whoa, we're in trouble. But I'll leave you with that thought.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to do it this way. I couldn't listen to your show any other way.
Well, at least you listened. Thank you so much, Donna. God bless you.
You're welcome.
And
you guys, God bless both of you. And don't you dare stop talking about the Lord. I don't care what anybody says. This show's the best. I did watch a little bit of Alex. He got a little upset with Pierce. I think he let Pierce push his buttons. That's all. He tends to do that. He gets a little, sometimes you can push his buttons. And Pierce has a way of doing that. Pushing buttons because I was watching that while I was sitting here. And Pierce Morgan
thanks for the
pushed
update.
His buttons.
Yeah, I can. Thanks for the update, and I can only imagine. Yeah, you know, it would be very difficult to be on the receiving end of that button pushing. But
I don't know. I don't think I could do it. Maybe you could, but I don't think I could. I thought Alex did pretty good not to choke him.
No,
I'm sorry,
like
Lord. Did
that.
I say that? I didn't really mean that. Now I gotta go pray for Pierce Morgan.
I hear you.
Did you say you're gonna pray for his deportation?
No, pray for.
No, I gotta go pray for Pierce Morgan because I just had bad thoughts.
Yeah.
I have to go pray for Pierce Morgan now. Okay, gentlemen. God bless you. Keep up the good work.
All
right. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
All right, we're going to move right along here. We're going to go to area code. Oh, we got Dave in Long Island. Dave, we're coming to you now. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hello, my brothers and sisters. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry about that. Hello, my infidel brothers.
Hello, Akbar.
Hello, Akbar.
Hello, Akbar, yeah. Yeah. Oh, we can't mention God. That's right. The Muslims can't say that anymore either, right? They don't allowed to say God either, right?
Well, I don't know. I just know that if you talk about God and don't couple the that with the profanity, then certainly you're a terrorist. So whatever that turns out to be.
Praise the
What's
Lord God Jesus Christ. I said something in the chat that I just wanted to let everybody know I was all right, because I was going to make a move to Florida, and I spent Christmas by myself. I was invited over. But anyway, New Year's by myself, because I was thinking about going then too. But anyway, a little encouragement about my whole thing. Remember when I had said that there was a lot of shaking on my floor and all this and that?
Mm-hmm.
I called the police twice. Both times they couldn't do anything. The old woman downstairs wouldn't let the cop in the first time in the bedroom. So I thought that was a little suspicious, but not to him, evidently. But I stayed like this. This went on for 3 or 4 months. And I kind of figured it wasn't a 90-year-old woman doing this. It had to be somebody with strength. So that's why I got a little mad at the guy next door, because she calls him his protector. And he was in my face one time, and I just told him, get out of my face. I was like Alex Jones, and he did get out of my face. He ran over to the sheriff a little later and said that I guess I yelled at him and this and that. A long story. It's like Peyton Place here. But what happened was every night when this was going on, about four or five times, I would say, dear Jesus, please. Can you please help me, oh Lord? I mean, serious people out there, everybody, I'm not kidding that this was going on almost every night, sometimes 4 or 5 hours during the night. It was like somebody was taking a pole and putting on the beams on their ceiling and shaking my floor, because the floor is like crap. It's a crappy floor. And I would actually say to Jesus, please, dear Jesus, you know, and I'm not going to go downstairs and shoot anybody. I'm not going to go and attack anybody. I did it the legit way. I called the police. They can't do anything. I called my complex. They're not going to do anything. This was nothing I could do. So I'm just asking Jesus, please. And what I'm going to say is a little crazy, but I actually said, dear Jesus, well, she took a fall. Evidently, she took a fall. She fell down. She broke her arm or something like that. And she got that fixed, then she fell down again, and she got her leg fixed, and then she's still down there. And I was asking Jesus that, and I would say things like, can you please teach Jesus somehow, maybe you can get her to go into the nursing home, or maybe something where she can't take care of herself anymore. And I would really humbly speak to Jesus like this, and I'm not asking for ill, but I knew that there was something evil down there doing this to me. And I knew that it wasn't her. I knew that whoever was down there was doing it. So anyway, make a long story short, I was speaking to somebody a couple of weeks ago. They said, oh, no, she's not down there. She's in a nursing home. So I said, what? She's in a nursing home? So yeah. So now I just felt this shaking a couple of days before. So I said, whoa, there's somebody still down there. So this continued. Well, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, I was sick and I was home, and they know that I usually work on Saturday and Sunday. So I'm home, I don't know. It was the last day, getting near the last day of the month. And I look out the window, I'm hearing some noise, and I see a black guy going, carrying a couch with a white guy all covered up. And they're moving the stuff out to a truck in the front with North Carolina plates. So I'm like, whoa. And So they did that. And I went outside. I took the plate number down just in case, whatever. And I watched them. They carried a couple of mattresses out. Then I stayed in my vehicle so I can just see. And they left, and I seen the girl, a girl leave in the car. She just looked at me. It was like just a plain stare. They left. I found out later that the grandmother allowed her granddaughter to live down there, I guess sometimes, and she was going with a black guy. Now, I'm not a racist. I know I love Vern. I love Alan West, Alan Keyes. But evidently, they must have heard me talking on this show. I must have a little loud voice. I do. And they must have heard me ragging on Obama. And I guess that touched this black guy. And he was, this is what I feel. And now they're gone. They are gone. For the past 4 or 5 nights, there's been no shaking in this apartment, and it's been beautiful. And this is just something that I just wanted to say to everybody. Things are going to get bad, and I just believe that Jesus is going to be there so much for us. I don't think there's going to be no rapture. We're going to go through this tribulation. But I think as long as we stay in a state of grace, we stay true to his word, we stay out of sin, we praise the Lord, and I mean praise him and trust in him, I think we will get through this. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that when I praised the Lord, when I was going around here and I knew that they were doing evil to me, doing this, I would praise the Lord, and it would give me some strength. It would give me strength that I would get so, I would do chin-ups. I was doing like almost 30 chin-ups, not at a time, but 3 sets, and then I'd do some more. I mean, it gave me such strength, and I'm 60 years old, and I just get a lot of power out of praising the Lord, and I think everybody will, and I know that people in the chat room feel that, but I'm just giving this as encouragement to everybody. And the other thing is that in Kayebo, when the Tutsis and the Tutsi, there was a tribal feud, and that was in Kayebo, I think, Doug, you know about that. I think you mentioned about that, when they slaughtered each other, or the one slaughtered the other. Well,
right.
there was a church going on, a church service, and the pastor or whoever said to the people that you're going to be in heaven today, because they were outside with machetes, and he said, you're going to be in heaven today. Well, they just went and they chopped them all up. They threw bombs inside. Well, there was this girl, Immaculee, and she hid in somebody's bathroom, and this guy was the ones that were doing the killing, but he didn't do anything to her. He actually allowed her to hide in the bathroom. And they were like, Immaculee, where are you? All this and that. And she stayed in that bathroom like 3 or 4 weeks in a small little bathroom asking Jesus for protection, and they never found her. They never found her, and that's how close they were. So I'm just like saying, yeah, yeah. And the other thing I'd like to say, in Conyers, Georgia in 94, when I went to see somebody, a visionary, Nancy Folly, she's passed away, this stuck in my mind, and now I'm thinking about it now, but she said she saw a vision, and she seen Chinese troops coming upon our shores. So.
Wow. Well, you know, a lot of people have had dreams, visions, whatever you want to call them, about foreign troops on our soil. Can you imagine civil strife here in this country, a civil war, and how vulnerable we would be, especially with our military spread out everywhere else? You know, it's not too hard to fathom that taking place, so it's very, very possible.
It's unbelievable, Doug. It's because this country has accepted homosexuality, abortion, all these very, very evil sins to the Lord, abominations. I mean, you can't get any worse than that. You know, and then that's why you know, God is saying, hey, okay, you want to do evil, you want to accept, do all this. Well, then I'm gonna let you have an evil president, and you want to stand by him, well, then you'll reap what you sow. You know, let him then do what he's got to do, and then you'll see, you know. But real quick, can I say this, Doug? The real reason why Obama gave Church the bust of Winston Churchill back, I believe, was because Winston Churchill, in the River War, it's called, I found this, 1899, and I'll just read just a few paragraphs, if I may. Could I, Doug?
Go ahead.
How dreadful are the curses which Mohammedanism lays on its Voltaires. Besides the fanatical frenzy, which is as dangerous in a man as hydrophobia in a dog, there is the fearful fatalistic apathy. The effects are apparent in many countries. Improvident habits, slovenly systems of agriculture, sluggish methods of commerce, and insecurity of property exist wherever the followers of the prophet rule or live. A degraded sensualism deprives this life of its grace and refinement, the next of its dignity and sanctity. The fact that in Mohammedanism law, every woman must belong to some man as his absolute property, either as a child, a wife, or a concubine, must delay the final extension of slavery until the faith of Islam has ceased to be a great power among men. I mean, this is the real reason why, right?
It could very well be, and I do suspect that that's probably closer to the cause than anything I've heard before. Churchill was very vocal about Islam, especially during and right after World War II. So that does make sense. But I'm glad the problem has abated for you, Dave, and very very good. I'm glad.
Yeah. So I don't know. I might stay on the island here and just I don't think it really doesn't matter where you're going to be. I think it's just going to be everywhere, and you're not going to escape it.
You're not going to run from it. No, you're not going to be able to run from what's coming.
I got to say, Dave, the last couple times you called, compared to this time, you sound so much more at peace than the last couple times, and that's great, and I'm happy for you, and I hope you continue like that.
Thank you,
my friend.
Thank you.
God bless you, my friend. And have a good night. Folks, I got to tell you something. It's Dave reminded me of this back in 1987 when I had a lady contact me. She was 70. I think she was like 74, 75 years old. And it was a friend of a friend, and this friend of a friend said, "Please see if you can help this woman." I'm at my wit's end, and this woman. I sat down with her. I asked her, I said, what's your problem? You know, being an investigator, I said, what's your problem? She said, somebody is rearranging the stuff in my refrigerator and messing up my bed after I make my bed.
I remember you telling me about this.
And I thought, oh, this poor woman. You know, she's like really... And she lived alone. She was divorced and her son and daughter, they wanted nothing to do with her. They thought she was crazy, and she really had few friends. And after talking with her, I said, isn't there someone you could talk to? And I'm thinking, well, maybe she needs some mental guidance, mental assistance. And I don't know, finally I ended up putting a motions activated hidden camera in her apartment. And I said, next time that something you notice has happened, you give me a call. Well, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks that went by, and I had kind of forgotten about it, and thinking, you know, this woman was just, she was just a little bit off, you know, and lonely and misguided. And she called me, and she said, well, it happened twice. So I said, okay, I'll be down, and I took a look at the video. And wouldn't you know it, honest to goodness, her ex-husband, who he must have been like 80 years old, had copied the key to her home or apartment. It was like a duplex. And was trying to make her think that she was crazy. Was actually, so he'd go in, and I had video of him.
What a sick person.
Seriously, I had, like, she would have, I remember this, she would have, like, a she'd just gone to the store to buy like a gallon of milk or juice or whatever, and he would dump half of it down the drain and then mess up the stuff on the couch, move a lamp like a foot, okay, a floor lamp like a foot. Do little things to make her believe that she was going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked her who else had the keys to the apartment. Well, she said no one. And, of course, I'm thinking, okay, this poor lady. Well, she did not realize that her ex-husband had actually copied the key of her, you know, had a duplicate key. And for whatever his motives were, he was trying to drive her insane and almost succeeded and almost made me believe that she was just lonely and in need of help. But, folks, things are not always as they appear.
No, that's right. And I remember you telling me that story before. That's creepy.
Somebody I'm telling you.
For what, a little revenge? Or
and at that age, somebody, you'd think it's so, you know, how devious.
Yeah.
What
do you gain from that?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not like she had any money, and it's not like, I mean, you know, much money, and it's just weird. The whole thing was weird. It's creepy. Creepy's a good word.
All right, we're going to go to area code 912. You're up next on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Doug and Joe. This is Daniel.
How's it going?
I just wanted to say that I really wanted to give y'all props as far as y'all radio show. I'm from a different background, probably, but listening to all this stuff and everything that y'all been talking about has really blessed me. I really want to give a shout out to Doug. He's closer to my age. I'm 27. You know, I started learning about the Illuminati, Satanism and hip-hop and modern music and, you know, finding out about the symbols and the signs and all these other things. And it's been a great journey. I've been on this journey for maybe about 3 years, just learning everything that I can learn. I had to pretty much use my mind as like a erase board and erase what has been taught to me and learn from the guys, you know, asking him to, you know, show me the way through the Holy Spirit and lead me to, you know, the truth and be able to show the truth from, you know, BS and other things that might be. But I actually wanted to make a comment on what I believe, I forgot who was talking about it, but we're talking about if the military came to your house and, you know, it was just you, why would you fight or, you know, shoot guns or do anything like that? And I wanted to actually point to the scriptures when Jesus came on Pentecost and he said that, you know, you would do greater things that I've done as well as the things that I've done. Now, we know the things that he's done as far as, you know, laying hands, raising the dead and, you know, casting out demons and all those other things. But those greater things, I believe those greater things are going to be unlocked in this particular time. You know, just like David had only one rock but took down the giant and, you know, all the other different stories where everyone thought that the little one couldn't do it but was able to. So I believe those greater things that we're going to be able to do might be, you know, out there in the wild. People might say sci-fi or this, that, and the other. But, you know, like Jesus, when they tried to stone him, he made everybody, they didn't know where he went, and he walked through the crowd, the whole crowd, while everybody was trying to get at him and everything. I believe he had just finished giving a parable or something, and the Jews wanted to stone him. But in the midst of them trying to stone him, he shrouded their eyes, and he couldn't even, I mean, no one knew where he was at, and he walked right through. I believe that in this time, if we're ever, you know, set up in that particular situation, if it's God's will, that gun won't shoot, or that bullet won't fire, or whatever the case might be, we'll be protected under that divine protection. You know, no matter what man might try to do or what Satan might do, God will do it just so he can get the glory for it. You know, somebody else might have saw it and be like, yeah, he was surrounded by all those people, and they tried to shoot, and no bullet would come out or no gun would happen. And that would be a catalyst to be able to bring someone else to Christ because of them seeing the miracles. You know, throughout the Bible, over and over again, we see that it was the miracles that actually brought more people to him. You know, he saw that no other guy could do this, or no other man was able to do this. So this must be the source that we're looking for. So I believe in the end times, when they try to persecute all the Christians, a lot of the times I believe it's going to be some type of miracle, some type of blessing that's going to show the world who God really is and who his children are. So no matter what situation we're in, whether it's guns, whether it's vaccines, whether it's whatever it is, he can't hurt us because of who we believe in. So it like y'all always say, you know, it's not about fear, it's about information, and we need to know this information. But at the same time, I believe that everyone should know that we are covered and we have been sealed. And see, because of that, we have the power and the authority over all things that are on this earth through Jesus Christ. So we have no reason to be, you know, scared or timid of anything, because we have that authority. And I just wanted to give that, you know, tidbit off. I had a whole bunch of stuff I wanted to talk about, but right now that's the first thing that came off my head. But I just wanted to, you know, tell y'all that I love everything that you do. I love this father and son thing. I wish my father could be into this like you all are. And I like the dynamic, you know, the older generation bridging with the younger generation. So now you can not only get the older people or the people that might have more of an intellectual thought process, but you can also get the younger ones that have more, I would say, faith prospect, as far as, you know, how in the Bible it says, you know, you have to have a mind of a child in order to believe things of the kingdom of heaven. It takes being able to believe and having faith, as well as the intellect and the information together, to actually truly get the kingdom of God and what he's trying to bring forth through his prophets, through his servants, and through everything else that happens. Because it says, you know, that God will not do anything. It says, surely God will not do anything without first telling his prophets, the servants. So everything is going to happen, but we, as the children of Christ, as the bride of Christ, will know, and we should be ready for it. I know I said a lot.
Exactly right.
Wow.
No, he can keep talking.
Fantastic.
Yeah. What's your name again?
Oh, Daniel.
I don't know if we asked you.
Daniel. Okay. Daniel.
No, what a great call. You are so right on the money.
Yeah, I like it when you said about Jesus walking through the crowd and that, you know, and no one recognized him or saw him or whatever you want to call that. And
that divine protection,
yes,
you talk about.
Yes.
That is,
yeah,
what you need to rely on. Instead,
exactly,
of grabbing,
yeah,
guns or running for whatever, they just know in your heart that you'll be okay as long as you're doing what you're supposed
to
do.
Well, that level of faith has got to be so strong.
Yeah.
You know, you really.
And see, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So without hope, you can't even have faith. So it's the hope of not seeing anything and knowing that you will be protected is what your protection is. But without the faith, you can't be protection. It's a part of his law. You know, with the faith comes the blessings. Every time Jesus healed anyone, he told them, I healed you because of your faith. It's not me that did this. This is you believing in the Father that I was able to be used as a vessel to do this.
Right.
And I just believe we all do need to be on that same. Yeah.
Fantastic. Daniel, what a great call, too. And I hope the Illuminati studies, that's really, you go down some rabbit trails, don't you, on that?
I've been from one to another. I started the Illuminati, then I found out about the 9/11 was the inside job, and then going in from that part to finding out about the 13 colonies and 13 this, and then, you know, the layout of Washington, D.C., and all the symbolism that's in that. You know, everything was brought together under this dark energy, you know, and we're the light of the world through all this darkness. And it's through the light that they see us that they want to ask that question, where did they get that from? And that's when we get the chance to witness to them and bring them closer to the kingdom of God.
Exactly.
I believe, you know, all this doom and gloom that, you know, and I try not to show it as doom and gloom because I witness to a lot of people, but it's like, yeah, I show you the doom and gloom, but the end product is that you're saved. You don't have to worry about, I mean, yes, we go through our tribulations, you know what I'm saying? You have to look at your test to tell your testimony. You know, so we all have to be tested, but during that test, we're actually building up our character to help someone else that might be in the same situation we used to be in. So now we're actually building up the Bride of Christ to be ready to take on all of these things that are coming at us and everywhere, from the water to the sky to the rain to the food that we eat. Everything that they're trying to force us is all genetically modified, messed up, and everything else. But like God says, you pray over your food, you pray over your things, and it will be clean through Jesus Christ. You know, when Paul says, you know, a Christian could get bit by a snake and not die, or drink poison and not die. It's not saying you should go out there and test the spirit, but at the same time, it's saying that no matter what they try to force to you, because you're under the hedge of protection, they have no authority over you. You know, we're covered in that blood. They can come through the blood, but they can never go through the blood. So as long as we keep ourselves covered, we keep our mind on heavenly things, as well as keeping our mind on earthly things, as far as to know where we're at and where we need to prepare. But our eyes need to stay on God, because God will tell us, don't go home, because this is going to happen. You might not even know why you don't go home, but 5 hours later you find out, you know, there was a big shootout and people died or this, that, and the other. We don't know the end product. All we got to do is have that faith to believe that no matter what, we will be what we say we will be. It's already been written. All we got to do is just follow the trail until it's time for us to go.
Amen.
I couldn't have said that any better. Daniel, thank you very much for your call, man.
Yeah, what a fantastic call. Please call back again. We'd love
Thanks
to,
for
okay.
listening.
I'd love to talk to you more about your journey and how you learned you know, with the music, because I was the same way back then.
Yeah,
and
I really connect, I really connect with you, Doug, a lot on a lot of things, because we have the same ideology and the same,
Daniel, I'm Doug. I'm the old man. Okay, so Joe's the guy.
Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. Joe. Yeah. But you know, we actually have a lot of the same thought process. I think it was last week or something. Yeah, it said, you know, who cares? The White House is dead. And I mean, I started laughing because I was like, you're so right. You know, because when we started looking at all the stuff that's being done, it's like the political side is really not for us to change, because it's already been written for it to come that way. All we got to do is prepare and get ourselves ready for where we got to go and what we have to do. You know, because at the end, it talks about how the Bride of Christ gets the wings and goes into the wilderness. I believe that's going to be us. You know, we have certain people that are good at building, certain people that are good at making food, making food from the earth, and other people that are good at this, and we're going to all come together wherever this wilderness is, and be there to help each other, going back to that community, back to that tribe-like state that you were talking about earlier, Doug, about us being able to actually come together and work together. I do believe that is the end product, but like, you know, you were saying, who do you know is going to set you up and who is not? And I believe, yeah, like you said, the Holy Spirit will tell you who you need to talk to and who you do not need to talk to. But I believe, you know, collectively, all together, that's the end product, is the ones that need to be with God and the ones that are following the God will know who their brothers and sisters are, and they will go and get them. And then they'll go to whatever place they might need to be, and God will provide for them wherever they are at. But it tells us a warning on when we need to flee, when we hear certain things, or when it's time to go. You know, and it makes so much sense, because now we hear about martial law and this, that, and the other, and the best place to be is nowhere in the city, you know, be out there in the wilderness or somewhere, you know, not around a whole bunch of metropolitan. Jesus said that 2,000 years ago, you know, when the son of perdition stands in the temple and calls himself God, know that it's time to leave. He said, don't go back to Judea. Those that are on the roof, don't go back to your house to collect things. Leave, go into the wilderness, because of what's about to come is the persecution. So, you know, it gives us the clues, it gives us everything we need. The Word of God is all in all and everything. And I'm sorry, I know I'm wasting so much time. But I love y'all.
And
I bless y'all. And I'll call back soon. I'm listening to y'all every day now. I've been listening to y'all for about a good 2 months, you know. But I plan on keep listening. Y'all have been a very good blessing for me, especially at work here in the Matrix. It's good to be able to plug in my earphones and still be able to hear the Word of God and hear the news at the same time. So I just want to bless y'all and tell y'all I hope y'all have many, many more, and I will be here praying for y'all as always.
Well, thank you for your call, Daniel. That was very uplifting and a perfect end to the show.
Yeah.
God bless you and continue in your passion.
Already to the end of the program, and I want to thank everyone for listening, for your patience, for your understanding, for your belief in us. See, the belief in the trust, we never want to squander that trust, never want to squander that belief that you have in us, never want to let you down ever.
No.
That's our promise to you.
You guys have an excellent night. We will see you tomorrow. I don't think we have any guests planned for tomorrow. Not yet. We might, but might not. But we will be here, and we hope to see you here. God bless each and every one of you. Have a safe night, and God willing, we'll see you all tomorrow.
Good night.